Blog Talk Radio.
I am dominating at my fingertips.
And you're listening to Hell in a Cell Radio.
The Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
Hell in a Cell Radio.
Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen,
hello and welcome to the MMA Year in Review edition of Hell in a Cell Talk Radio. I am, of course, the host, the Dean of Credibility, Double D, and you can find me at Folsom County. Like I said, tonight we're going to look back at the year that was for MMA. Omega and Squad and I will be joined by Bill Bookwater. But for right now, joining me as always, he is the above-average comedian, Dan Colachico. How are you, Dan?
I'm doing all right this evening. Hello, everybody. You can follow me on Twitter at DanLaw83. And, of course, the best hockey podcast out there, Obey the Puck. Follow us on Twitter at Obey Puck Show. Monday nights at 9 on the Hell in the Cell Talk Radio Network.
All right, and I already alluded to the fact that he is here with us from the start tonight.
Yay!
It is Omega Squad, Chris Green. Omega, how are you this fine evening?
I am fine. Happy Winter Festival of your choosing to all our listeners.
That's right.
Follow me on Twitter, at Omega Squad.
They're all pagan rituals anyway, aren't they?
I like pagans.
Why not?
Pagans Likers? Are fun.
I can't wait to talk about MMA with you and Bill, who will be joining us in about 15 minutes. So Bill Bookwater will be here in about 15 minutes now. Before, I think I'm going to start off right off the top with AJ Styles. Now, of course, TNA let him go.
But
he's going to be on the Independents. So he's back on the Independents. He is actually going to be at CZW's anniversary show. Both of you, Dan, what do you think about AJ Styles not only going to CZW, but back on the independent scene?
Like I said with another talent, TNA's loss is the independent scene's gain. And AJ Styles has been one of my best, my favorite in-ring report. I can't talk tonight. In-ring performers for years. And just the fact that he's going to be at Voorhees, New Jersey in February on the 8th, right? February 8th, yes.
Yes.
Is amazing. That's going to be a ticket getter just for that reason right there.
How about you, Chris?
I think it's a good opportunity for AJ Styles to get around and get out and see some different people, get around and get some new promotions, hopefully get his stock up. And, you know, will he end up back in TNA? I don't know. Probably eventually, if I had to guess, but I think it's fine for him to be out there and give people the opportunity to see him live and in person, which they haven't had a chance to in quite a while, I don't imagine.
I think it's also refreshing for him. I mean, I'm sure this is just from obviously an outsider perspective that I'm sure it's just been not that great as of late, obviously, or he wouldn't have left, and this is going to be refreshing for him, and it you never know the fire lit under somebody's butt on how much it ups their game in ring and out.
Yeah, I think he was probably money was related. I mean, this is a guy who's been with TNA since the very beginning. I would argue hasn't really got his due in TNA for being that person, and I think hopefully he uses this as leverage to you know, get a better deal in the future.
I agree with all of that.
Sorry, D.
Also, he joins Chris Hero back on the Independents. So, I mean, these are two good talents that are back on the Independents. And to your point, Omega, this is really something for the fans, to enjoy.
I mean, not only that, it opens him up for a whole other world of seeing different people, going to different places. I mean, really big and really small. And not in a bad, and small, not in a bad way. I mean, to see somebody of that caliber in the ring that close, that's pretty amazing.
And perhaps he has the opportunity to just wrestle instead of being mired in ridiculous storylines. And whatever pit of despair you want to call TNA's creative process.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that. Now, moving right along, I think that's very noteworthy stuff. I have a grinds my gears this week.
Uh-oh.
Well, it appears I've been fired. Well, as long as I'm no longer working here, let me tell you something. You know what really grinds my gears? You, America. You.
Well, this grinds my gears has to do with something that happened over the weekend. Dan got on a bit of a rant on the What's Wrong with Wrestling weekend with Harry Barnett, the great Harry Barnett, I should say.
I guess.
And you got onto a rant talking about other companies scheduling dates against competing companies. Now, the only trouble with that is the company that you were referring to, you never did say, but it was rather obvious for people who listen to the show, for people that know
for
what's going
friends
on.
And, yeah, friends and
it was ECWA.
Obvious.
Anyway, it was ECWA that you were referring to. However, people know, except apparently you, Dan, that they run on the first Saturday of every month. They have been doing it for at least the time that Tartaglia and Joe have been running the company. So your diatribe was filled with misinformation and what do you have to say for yourself, Dan?
No, I'm ashamed and I'm an idiot for it. I try to, when I speak on truth, and I'd like to say 90% of the time we're on the same page, and I was on another book on Saturday, complete other book. I'm wrong. I was wrong on Saturday. I was wrong for what I said, completely wrong. And I got called on it, and I'm glad I got called on it, because not only do I not – I don't like to be against anybody at all, period. Anybody we know or anybody we do business with, I don't want to be on the other side of it. That's the truth. Number two, I like to be friendly, and that wasn't very friendly. And again, it was based on misinformation and no facts. So I do want to apologize to Mike, to Joe, to everybody at ECWA for it opening my big fat mouth. And it will never happen again unless I have all the facts, period. I was wrong and I apologize.
I believe what I said. Now, here's the genesis of what I heard. I got home from Cage of Death, and I said, oh, there was a show that Dan and Harry did. Let's listen to it. About 20 minutes in, I hear this rant, and I'm like, why? Why is it going on?
I don't know.
Because I'll put it this way. I think we have taken great strides to get away from all the BS that's out there. Of course, in the early days of this show, there was a Monster Factory thing, really just one-sided because it was us blasting them week after week.
Unwarranted.
You could say that.
Yeah.
Say that.
I'll take that.
Oh, shut up, Chris.
Yeah, you shut up. You be quiet over there. I'm not going to talk during MMA. You shut up now.
Sorry.
Well,
that
no,
was
he,
warranted.
He has every right to put his opinion in.
Yeah, Dean, before you continue, I didn't hear it yet, Chris.
Didn't what?
Oh,
you didn't?
See, I didn't hear your upsetness.
Oh, Dan.
There you go.
There you go.
Go ahead, Dan.
There you go.
There. But, I mean, in the early days, we did do that. But the thing is, if you look at the facts, if you look at everything, Monster Factory has been quite successful.
Unbelievable.
They're going to have Colt Cabana. They're going to have Cliff Compton. Larry Sharp has put out a a shoot video with RF Video. He's going to be on The Art of Wrestling with Colt Cabana coming up in January. Tommy Macklin was just signed, apparently.
Apparently.
This is what the Monster Factory has put out. Tommy Macklin will be going to Florida, apparently. I don't know for sure, but this
That's
is what they're saying.
Sounds like he's going, yeah.
This is what they're saying. I mean, they're saying he signed with WWE. Obviously, that means he's going to Florida. They didn't exactly say where he was going or whatever, but
yeah.
The thing is, they have been quite successful.
And they never said anything about us.
No,
they never said anything about the other side while we sat here with our flak jackets open going for no reason. No reason whatsoever, and I'm on record saying that.
I mean, we were listening to one side of the argument. However, in the final analysis, perhaps, and this is just conjecture, perhaps there were some points that we should have listened to on the other side.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I can't say with 100% certainty, but I think you have your side, my side, and in the middle there is the truth somewhere to be had.
But what the lesson I've learned in this situation and the Monster Factory situation is if you have your side and you don't know the other side, probably shouldn't say a word.
Probably.
Probably better off not saying a damn thing.
Now, in reference to what you were saying about promotions that do promote on the same date, you're 100% correct in that. Promotions that do that out of spite. I mean,
and there are.
In ECWA, they are battling with Right Coast Pro in Delaware, in the same town, for God's sakes.
Within 10 miles.
Less than that. It's within 5 miles.
Is it really that close?
Yes.
Oh, Jesus.
And Right Coast Pro came up out of nowhere, and I'm not getting on either side of this, but I'm just saying what the facts are. The facts of the case are ECWA was promoting for years, at least three at this point,
yeah,
on the first Saturday of the month. Right Coast Pro is now promoting events to battle them. And what they're doing is taking old stars of ECWA that Tartaglia and Joe have since swept away. They're using those old stars like Mega, like the Courageous Cruz and all those, some of the fan favorites that fans did enjoy, they're using those stars. And hey, but I don't think they should be running on the same date, but that's neither here nor there. Maybe they're not running on the second Saturday because they don't want to compete against CZW. Maybe they don't want to run on the third. Who knows why? But you just look at it from an outside perspective and you go, well, that seems kind of
dumb.
And yeah.
But, I mean, if in the essence, if you want to talk about the essence of it, if you have a company that you know for 3 years, ECWA, in my opinion, if you're in the same area as ECWA, you don't run the first Saturday. You know what I'm saying? Just out of...
Unless you want to compete.
Right.
You want to compete.
And if you have... Basically, ECWA, all the other BS aside, ECWA has tenure, seniority, and the stars for it. You don't take another company and go, I'm going to run against them, unless you're being...
You're close to running here.
Yeah, unless you're being competitive, unless you're trying to take business away from them,
and that I can agree with. You got there after the long way, so it's just a very odd thing. Of course, you have just so much going on, you know, and it's independent wrestling and it's BS and whatever. Look,
can I ask you a question?
But the thing to me is, if you want to go to ECWA, go there. If you want to go wherever you want to go, go there and have a good time. And what did you want to ask me?
I know before I ask the question is I became, for 20 minutes there on Saturday, I became part of what I hated so much a year ago with a certain somebody on complaining about another company. Who cares? You know what I'm trying to say, Dean?
Well, yeah.
Yeah. And especially when you came to me, it's like, even after I said it, I was like, that was stupid. I have no idea why that just happened. There was a lot of, let me just say this. I was very frustrated on Saturday, 20 minutes into that show, and that's all I'm going to say. My question is, do you, and this is probably an obvious answer, do you think most of it not mentioning the company we already mentioned. Do you think some of it's on purpose? Do you think, well, we have to run a Saturday, let me just pick this one?
Who knows? I mean, from an outside perspective again, and I know nothing. I haven't talked to Joe or Mike in a year at this point. Well, about a year. I know nothing about how RCP is run. I barely know who is in charge of the company, who promotes whatever. From an outside perspective, and a complete outside perspective, it does look like they are trying to compete with them on the same day in the same town with stars that fans did clamor for, in a way. And there were fans that left ECWA. There were new fans that were brought in under Mike and Joe. So, in a way, I guess it just doesn't – as much as I hate to say it, there are only so many ways you can split an M&M, and that I agree with.
Yeah,
that's
right.
One thing that Joe always said. There's only so many ways you can split an M&M. There's only so many ways that you can – wrestling's in a downturn, and if you're taking this crowd – now, I was just at Cage of Death, and that was a pretty big crowd, not as big as last year, but it was still a huge crowd.
Yeah.
And if that is – just say that's your litmus test, then – you're splitting that crowd if you're running the same dates. And even on that date, you had Ring of Honor that was running in New York that talent went to after they were done wrestling for CZW. So it was close enough to drive to, obviously. It was within driving distance. There was another show. Monster Factory ran a show. So there were plenty of – you're just splitting the audience. It doesn't make sense to me, even on the Monster Factory's end. Why would you run against the biggest – arguably the biggest show on the independents.
When you're that small, why would you, instead of just taking 60 of, let's say 150 people show up, just an example, why would you be happy with just taking 60 instead of running on a separate day and getting maybe 100 out of the 150 that went to a different show?
Well, that's the whole thing. And I think the byproduct of all this is that people do become alienated with it. They become alienated with all this inner scuffles, and people just want to go and have fun and watch an entertaining show. Now, see, Monster Factory, I can see what they were doing, though. If you don't want to see the violence, the ultra-violence of Cage of Death, they give you an alternative, an old-school wrestling show, family-oriented, and that's fine and great. The trouble is, you're only hurting your own audience, because I'm sure they had some people that went to every Monster Factory show that didn't go because they were at CZW, because they want to see Chris Hero, or they want to see Dickinson against Richards, that sort of thing.
I just, you know, it was a very, very loud smack in my face, believe me, and it's just to the point where I just want to start over and just have fun again. I don't want to – I mean, and I mean the show, I just want to promote independent wrestling and MMA. I don't want to have – well, we're not going to depend on that company because they hate us. I just want to have fun again.
Well, and see, throughout this whole thing, I've stayed friendly with Major McClendon, who is a Monster Factory guy. There are a certain degree many people that I've stayed friendly with on both sides of the story. So, people are people. People make mistakes. You made a mistake. You made up for it. So, there you go.
No, I mean, it to the point where I just want to kick in the door and go, I'm sorry.
Now, Chris, your final analysis of this.
Well, I mean, we shouldn't be alienating anyone. We should be staying out of it. I think Dan's right. You know, if this isn't fun, we should just we don't need all this angst and stuff we had, especially what we had about a year ago. Just let it go. All
some good episodes, though, Chris. I will say that.
It's good stuff, Chris. You know that.
Well, okay.
Some very good material.
It's the off-air stuff, I think. Again, got a little antsy, a little.
Perhaps.
Ugly, a little ugly. At the
it did. It got ugly. It got ugly, and I don't want ugly. I want pretty. It makes up for this ugly face.
I just see you in exfoliating cream, Dan.
It felt good. I'm going to start using it regularly.
search.
Fiance saw it and bought me a bottle.
Did she?
Yeah.
Did she really?
She thought it was funny.
I feel pretty.
I feel pretty. No, but you know what?
That scene in Silence of the Lambs comes to me. Are you tucking right now, Dan?
No. I never, it's impossible for me to tuck. Thank you. Anyway, that's because of my fat thighs. Anyway,
I'm almost glad that our MMA year review is about.
It's late. Yeah, me too. I thought it was okay because you would have been like, he's on the line now. Like, privately, you would have been like, he's on the line. Don't say anything stupid. And that completely lost my point. No, the last couple days from your moment when you came to me to the other morning to now, I've been thinking deeply about it. So I just want it to be fun again. And I think we could make it fun again. We're fans of wrestling. We're fans of MMA. Let's just do what we do best, interview the boys, review the shows, and let's entertain people.
Well, on that note, Dan,
see you later.
I certainly agree. Enjoy your hockey game. I'm sure you'll be back. We have Cage of Death to talk about when we're through with all this. Omega, are you ready?
Bonesaw's ready.
It's time!
Joining us at this time is former Steve Blackman fighter and current MMA referee. It is none other than Bill Bookwater. How are you doing tonight, Bill?
How are you doing, Dean? I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, I'm looking forward to this. I can't wait to talk about the MMA year in review. This should be a good look back. You're also with Omega Squad Chris Green. And Chris, where did you want to start? Because this is kind of your baby. What do you want to talk about first?
Well, I mean, you think back to some of the bigger stories of mixed martial arts, and I think, you know, one of the biggest has been the rise of women's MMA overall, both in the UFC and in the more regional circuit and the promotions like Invicta. You look at just the strides that have been made in the last year. You look at Ronda Rousey and Liz Carmouche being the first on that first match. You look at the Ultimate Fighter season with women on it. You look at some of the matches that came out of there, that Jessamyn Duke Raquel Pennington fight that came out. You look at, looking forward, you look at the strawweights coming in and an entire division being pulled from Invicta and gonna run that Ultimate Fighter 20. The women continue to make real strides in this sport and have put on some of the most entertaining fights of the whole year.
Bill, how do you see the future of women's MMA?
I'll tell you what, if it were not for Ronda Rousey, you know, Dana White's pretty vocal on this himself. If not for Ronda Rousey, women's MMA wouldn't even be here. But I'll tell you what, as long as Dana White's a businessman, as long as there is dollars to be made and he sees an opportunity, that's what he's going to go with. He was never against women MMA or women fighting. He didn't see a way to make money off it. And that's why he said women will never fight in the UFC, is because he couldn't make cash off it. Then when he saw this star in Ronda Rousey and this in-your-face thing, he found out a way to spin it. And now he's making a couple bucks off it, you know, and he's a promoter. He promotes stars. He makes stars. You know, he can do that. And as long as Ronda Rousey is there to carry the torch during these base-building years, I see women's MMA being around. You know, that way he'll have some time to formulate other stars so that when she steps away, he'll have somebody else to go to. But, yeah, I think women's MMA will be around for a little bit.
All right. Now, how do you guys – I'll start with you, Bill, and then go to Omega. How do you guys feel the portrayal of Ronda Rousey was on The Ultimate Fighter this year? Do you think that this hurt her and more fans are now on Team Tate, or how do you see it?
You want to go first, Chris? Oh, okay.
No, yeah, go ahead, Bill.
All right. No, that show, they edit and portray, and they can make anybody look however they want. They can make it look like Rhonda's completely, like, the meanest person on the face of the earth, or she's in there, you know, cutting holes in T-shirts, having girl time with all the girls, you know? That's kind of like asking if the coaching thing, you know, hurt Brock Lesnar. No, he's still Brock Lesnar. Whether you like him or you hate him, you're still going to watch him. You know what I mean? You're still going to pay to watch him, whether you want to see him beat somebody up or when he's, you know, whether you want to see him get his face kicked in, you know, you're still going to pay. It doesn't matter what the deal is. So, I mean, no, I think I think that exposed them, you know, women's MMA to a broader base of people. And I really don't think that it hurt her image. If you like Ronda, you like her. If you don't, you don't. I mean, she's pretty much the same, you know, she gives you that same demeanor and that same attitude every time. I don't think she's going to change for anybody, you know.
Go ahead, Chris.
I think in the final analysis, it'll come down that Ronda Rousey was helped by that portrayal. Whether or not it is reality is Bill's probably right. They edit that show to make heroes and villains. And in this case, they made Misha Tate to be the hero and Ronda Rousey to be the villain. I think a lot of it is just that Ronda is an emotional person. She wears her emotions on her sleeve. She gets upset. And you know, she just reacts. She when she's a reactor, she usually takes it and goes a little farther than maybe we would deem necessary. We can blame it on the editing, and I think there's some truth to that. But when you look at how she was in that interview post the Ultimate Fighter finale, just kind of looking out, not being engaged, not being personable, just really not involved. That is the kind of stuff that editing doesn't explain. And you know, whether or not that probably hurts her from making fans, but it's not going to necessarily hurt her from selling pay-per-views or selling fights, because just like professional wrestling, there are going to be people who want to see her get beat, and that's only good for women's MMA as a whole. But you know, I think Ronda has a lot of pressure on her. She is the face of women's MMA. She is very young. She doesn't have a lot of experience. It came on very fast. And, you know, I think she's got a little bit of growing up to do. I'm not saying she comes across as a petulant child someday, and I think some of that's by choice. I think she could probably do with a little media seasoning, but in the end of the day, it's probably good overall for UFC, Ronda Rousey, Misha Tate, and women's MMA as a whole.
Do you think that she has been asked to portray a heel, so to say?
Yeah, it could be that she was suggested to play a little bit. I'm sure that happens. I'm sure she's coached to do that to some extent, but I think some of it's just the way she naturally is. I mean, the best heels are playing off of qualities that exist already. So,
how about you, Bill? How do you feel? Do you think that she was asked, this is part of the UFC spin machine, or it's just an exaggeration of who she really is?
You know, you got to think that somewhere behind the scenes there's a stats guy for Spike TV saying, you know, 51.1% of men will react this way if you do this, so that's what we're going to go with. But you know what? She's, you know, even over in Strikeforce, this was kind of her persona, her kind of, you know, that's kind of like asking, you know, if Nick Diaz has a personality coach, you really don't need one. You just put a microphone in front of the guy's face and let him talk, and just gold comes out, you know. Sometimes a little incoherent, but, you know, whatever, he's his own character, you know. I really don't think she probably had too much coaching at all. You know, she's a champ. She's confident in her abilities, and I mean, you know, ultra confident, and that's kind of the way you have to be. And I kind of think that's all you're seeing right there is just, you know, the amount of confidence she has in herself, and you know, she can't show, you know, weakness for a second. So she's got that in your face, you know, middle finger flicking you off to whoever, you know, is trying to take her spot. You know, that's how she eats, and I really think that's all you're seeing. I don't think she had too much help.
That's a good point. Now, Anderson Silva, GSP, they both had kind of a strange year. Anderson Silva, of course, got knocked out by Chris Weidman. He was goofing off in there. We really didn't see him take Weidman seriously. GSP has since gone on hiatus, is the best way to put it. Vacated the title. Bill, where do you see these guys? What happened with these guys this year?
Well, what happened, I mean, they had each pretty much, you know, more than not cleaned out their division. There was just really no fan interest in them seeing anybody fight in their division because it had been a while since anybody put up a credible fight towards them. So the money was, you know, the $49.95 or whatever it is was asking, you know, who would win in a fight between these two, you know. And now, you know, each one of them in their own weight class has had a competitive fight. So, you know, the $50 in your pocket anymore isn't really trying to see who would win between St. Pierre and Silva because there's nothing left. It's, hey, this guy, you know, I want my $50 to see Hendricks and GSP fight again because, you know, so it happened there. And, you know, I'm still waiting to see Weidman Silva won. You know, I understand all that Weidman proved is that he can hit like a pro and knock people out when they stick their chin in front of him, you know. You haven't really seen Anderson Silva fight Chris Weidman. You really haven't. I mean, that's I don't think he'll be playing around this time. But, I mean, there's just what happened with as far as those two fighting each other. It's just, and you know what, to be honest with you, Silva's getting up there a little bit. St. Pierre's getting up there a little bit in age. There's always a hungry lion, you know. I think that's all you're seeing is it's people who want the spotlight. It's hard to stay champ for as long as they have. You know, you always have people gunning for you, and they're training that little bit extra harder. And I don't care what anybody says. When you've been top of the mountain for so long, man, you're not training as hard as the guy who's coming up. You can't be. You know what I mean? Maybe for the first year or two, but you do. You lose that edge, and, you know, it's just a younger, hungrier, more driven guy is always going to knock the older lion off the pedestal. I just really think that's all we're seeing. You know, it's and, you know, Silva's, whether he wins the next Weidman rematch or not, I mean, how far away from retirement do you think he is? I understand he has this 9-fight deal and this and this and this and this, but, you know, I can't see him in the octagon more than another 4 or 5 times tops, and it depends on how he looks this next fight. You know, if he gets dropped and knocked out like that again, I could definitely see him walking away. He's not going to toil around and train to be a contender. He's going to be the champ or he's going to walk away. You know?
Yeah. How about you, Chris?
Yeah, I tend to agree. I mean, I think this is the culmination of two very dominant champions who have not been challenged in a long time, that they went down two different paths. Anderson just got disinterested, I think. I think Anderson just didn't have the motivation to train or the motivation to take his opponent seriously. And as we saw in that Weidman fight, he danced around, got a little cocky, and paid for it. With GSP, I think you see the pressure starting to build, and you start seeing, you know, especially this is a guy more so than Anderson Silva that carries a country on his back. And I think that pressure really got to him and started to mentally break him. I think we're seeing, but as well as starting to see the accumulation of all these fights, these long, drawn-out fights. He has the most time in the octagon. He's had several injuries. He is, you know, just kind of breaking down, both mentally and physically. And as we saw in that Hendricks fight, as close as that fight was, I think it really got to him. I think it's really said, I don't know how much longer I can do that. And he probably didn't want to go out as I think it's two things. I don't think he really wants to quit per se, but I think he needs a break to really decide whether or not he wants to come back. So I don't necessarily believe he's retired, but it wouldn't surprise me either way if he does retire. But, you know, as Bill was saying, being the top guy, there's always someone gunning for you. There's always someone training to be better. I think this is the culmination of that long title reigns, and it's really probably just as simple as that.
I want to take a moment now to take a look at some of the best fights of 2013. Now, a consensus, and I'm getting this list from Tapology.com, a consensus number one for fights this year was John Jones taking on Gustafsson. Now, I'm going to start with you, Bill, because I know that you said that this was a 5-round sparring match. It really didn't impress you that much.
No, I mean, it really didn't. I mean, people like what they like, but, you know, I even right now, sitting on a chair, I think back to that, and all I picture is Gustafsson backpedaling every time. you know, and just to really, you know, it was a hard fight for the judges to score. I'm not saying he didn't hit John Jones. He did. I saw his face. You know what I mean? He did hit him, but it wasn't really, you know, the point sparring is a bit, you know, it's a bit harsh. Maybe it was bigger than that, but neither one of them to me really, really committed to finishing each other. It seemed like they were both, you know, for whatever the reason, they were kind of okay or content with that going to the judges, you know. And a lot of times guys will do that. They figure, oh, I'm doing pretty well. And subconsciously, they're like, well, I don't feel like I can finish John Jones, so let me see if this one can run to the judges. I mean, you know, there a lot of people seem to be entertained by the fight. But, you know, you look at a fight like, you know, Mark Hunt and Bigfoot Silva, and, you know, you could ask them, hey, judges, and they say, what judges? You know, they were trying to finish all the way to the end. I can't believe one of them didn't drop. But, I mean, for Gustafson, you know, it was just, to me, there was just a lot of constant backpedaling, running back to the center of the cage, which is fine. He was trying to fight him in the center of the cage, but to me, you know, there was no real commitment to finish that fight or really, you know, impressively win of the judges. It seemed like a lot of in your face, a lot of jabs, a lot of, you know, just a lot of leg kicks, a lot of, you know, and that was kind of five rounds of that. That's why I had mentioned online, I said, I don't know, it's kind of like a little point sparring match there that, you know, both of them seemed like okay to go to the judges. You know, I'm used to seeing John Jones finish, and maybe his fans were just spoiled, you know what I mean, because he has finished so many top guys, and this is one where he didn't. But, yeah, it definitely was not, you know, wasn't my most entertaining fight of 2013. So,
how about you, Chris? How did you see that fight?
Well, I thought it was a very close fight, and I thought it was entertaining, but it may just be the mystique of John Jones kind of crumbling, and the fact that you could see, when I look at it, I look at Alexander Gustafson, and I start seeing, it may not necessarily be Alex, but it may be, you start seeing that next generation coming up, the next group of guys that are going to be the champions, that are really going to test the guys who are on top now. We've seen that all year, pretty much. Younger guys coming in, the new generation of fighters challenging the champions, really taking them to the wire. And I think that was what the mystique of the fight is. Yeah, I get Bill's point. I can understand that mentality. It's a valid concern. If you're not entertained by it, that's completely fine. I was entertained by it. I thought it was okay. I thought it was action-packed. I thought there was definitely lots of movement, lots of things. Like, these guys were really just trying to find openings. Whether or not they were really committing to finishing, I can agree with that. They probably weren't committing to finishing, but they were looking to try to get the points and win the fight. But I thought it was overall entertaining. I agree. I don't think it was the most entertaining fight of the year, but I think it was certainly one of the top fights of the year.
Now, the number two consensus pick, and this is based on everybody that goes to Tapology, they vote, they rank their top 10 fights of 2013. This is how it comes together. The number two consensus fight was Wanderlei Silva against Brian Stann, and this was Stann's last fight, actually. He retired after this, went into commentary and the production aspect of things. What do you remember most about that fight? Was it a top fight? It was very competitive, and Silva really did put a finish on and extended his career a little bit, I think.
Well, I mean, as far as fight, yeah, I do remember. I remember Wanderlei like pointing him and stuff, and that's, you know, people love that because that's old school Wanderlei Silva. And, you know, unfortunately, in the past couple fights, you know, of his career, you haven't really seen that. He really hasn't had what I would, you know, say is an overly dominant run in the UFC, and that kind of, you know, that's pleasing people. He is a fan favorite, man. People really do like that guy, you know, no matter what he turns in, just because of the way he fights. You know, you don't have to tune in and wonder if Wanderlei Silva, you know, I wonder which Wanderlei is going to show up tonight. There's one, you know, and
yeah,
he's going to go for it, and that's what I mean. That's that real commitment to finish the fight, and people love that. So, yeah, no, as far as Brian Stann doing what he did, you know, I think that was a good move on Brian's part. He's a very, very intelligent guy, you know what I mean? He kind of sees the writing on the wall as far as longevity and, you know, probably saw a broadcasting opportunity. You know, I'm sure he waited out, and, you know, I do miss fighting, but I'm having a better time behind the scenes refereeing, I'll tell you that, you know, so I'm sure his gig, you know, broadcasting is real sweet, and he's really good at it. He's a a nice face for the camera to zoom in on and stuff, and he saw his opportunity and it. So, yeah, I could see how fans would put that in. It's surprising that it's number two, though, you know, to me anyway. But I would just say that it's called filled in at number two because of the way it finished. People were probably pretty pleased with that because people, you know, people really, really do like Generally Silva. So,
how about you, Chris?
I look at that fight and I think back to it. I just think about two guys just slinging, just going at it, knocking each other down, and just laying it all out with punches and just haymakers the whole way. And yes, the way it ended was spectacular. It reinvigorated Vanderlei's career. And you know, did it knock Stan out of the UFC? No, I don't think that was the reason he retired, but that was certainly one of the more entertaining fights of the year. You know, again, I don't know that I would call it necessarily number two. I think it was probably the most visually pleasing. But if I have to rank it with other fights, I don't think I would put it number two. But a great fight, absolutely top five of the year.
Now, the third is my favorite. It was the three-round battle between Gilbert Melendez and Diego Sanchez. While Diego never really had – he nearly finished it in the third, but just really a fight where two friends, really, because they are friends outside, training partners, that sort of thing, really a good three-round battle. It ended with Gilbert Melendez winning by decision. Bill, what do you remember about that Melendez and Sanchez fight?
I remember mostly the comments online afterwards when people were calling it the fight of the year. I said, since when is a two-and-a-half-round beatdown? You know, one-sided beatdown, the fight of the year. You know what I mean? No, like we were saying, visually pleasing, yes. Absolutely, but until that third round, you know, Diego really didn't get a whole heck of a lot started, and you know what I mean? Man, that guy's got, you know, Sanchez, man, a lot of respect. He's been around for a long time. I would say he's probably had the, you know, one of the longest, most productive careers out of that cast of The Ultimate Fighter 1. I mean, he's still turning in fights like that, and, you know, Melendez was just on a higher level that night, but, I mean, I really, you know, as far as fight of the year, visually entertaining, but you know Diego waited a long time to have his moments. It wasn't really one of those back and forth type fights, but yeah, I could definitely see how the fans would vote that in as one they definitely want to see again on one of those, you know, Spike Unleashed. Unfortunately, I don't have that anymore, but you know, yeah, I could see. I would say definitely, you know, like top five of the year, but again, probably not one of my most competitive back and forth, like, oh my God, you know, he's going to finish, and then, oh my God, the other guy's going to finish, and, you know, it took Diego a while to find his range in that one, definitely, so.
And before, Chris, you answer the question, I think the reason that I rate it so highly as my favorite fight of the year is just because of the never-say-quit attitude of Sanchez, with the blood going into his eyes, with really getting beat those first two rounds decisively. That's why it was just one of those fights that he just didn't give up. But Chris, your thoughts on that fight?
Yeah, it actually is my favorite of the year as well, and I completely understand the feeling that, yeah, it wasn't competitive. But just in terms of guys that just don't know how to give up, just watching Diego Sanchez just continue to move forward and try. And it wasn't even like he was really doing that badly. The third round there, when he actually tried to get that submission, showed that he wasn't completely out of the fight. Yeah, he was getting beat pillar to post for two rounds. I completely agree with that. But just as a picture of the fighter, being the epitome of what the ultimate fighter should stand for, the never say die attitude, just walking in when everybody thinks you're finished. It was just one of those fights that is just memorable. And I don't think, for me, the competitive nature of it doesn't really play into it in this case. But if I'm looking at the more meaningful fights of the year, the more competitive fights of the year, yes, it's not that competitive. But just as overall entertainment, something I would watch again going back, yes, this was my favorite fight of the year.
And the last one I want to talk about in great detail is the number four fight, ended in a draw. It was, of course, one fresh on everyone's mind. Mark Hunt, Bigfoot Silva. Chris, start out with what you remember from that five-round battle that these two had.
I just remember two big guys throwing everything at each other, things landing, getting punched in the face, and neither of them dropping. And just being incredulous that two men could take that kind of punishment and remain standing. When we discussed this fight on the show, I mentioned that neither of these guys was leaning up against the cage while these punches are being thrown. They're both standing in the middle of the cage and just are not falling. It was almost absurd that two men could take that level of damage and still be fighting after 25 minutes. It's just ridiculous. It was one of the better heavyweight fights of all time. It was more competitive than the Melendez-Sanchez fight. Just, you know, there's really not much to say about it. Just incredible that two guys could take that kind of beating and still end up as a draw. And the fact that it did end up as a draw officially was apropos.
And, Bill, how do you remember that fight?
Well, the reason that for me gets, you know, that's my fight of the year. Reason being is the back and forth, you know, like I said, that each had their legitimate moments where you thought the other might win. And it wasn't a 30-second exchange in the first round and then the fight was over. It was literally, you know, that whole mystique of really how the heck is that guy still standing? And like, oh, man, this is it. You know, this has got to be it. And all of a sudden, you know, the other guy comes back. You know, if I'm talking, you know, for my money, if I'm talking fight of the year, the one that I'd pay or take some time to watch again, it's definitely that one. And I mean, even they did start out slow. The first 2.5-3 minutes wasn't anything to write home about. It's not like they came out of the gates gunning like that. But after they got into it and both found their range a little bit, for me, like I said, that's fight of the year. That's what I remember, it, the back and forth. That's what, as a fan, whether, you know, fans just want to see good fights. Yeah, you have your favorite fighter, but, I mean, along the way, you know, you want to be entertained by these other fights the UFC is putting on. And, you know, the back and forth is what can take you through an emotional roller coaster, and that's what's fun for a fan. You know, as far as seeing a one-sided beatdown, that's okay, but, like, the whole back and forth, it takes you, like I said, takes you on that roller coaster of emotion, and that's when a fan at the end of five rounds can step back and go, wow, both of them, just wow, you know what I mean? And I will still put this out there right now. I don't know how, I mean, heavyweights, they hit so hard at that level. You know, Mark Hunt is a world-class striker. He's been doing that for a long time. It wasn't like he just decided to get into a stand-up fight the other night. And, you know, like I said, Bigfoot Silva, you know, you look at that chin. And you figure he would be pretty easy to hit and go down, but man, I mean, he stood in there and he did his thing, and that's one. I'm not sure if they're going to put a rematch on for that one, or anyway, I think Mark Hunt already said that's one he's not really interested in because he doesn't think they can top the first one.
Yeah, it would certainly be hard pressed to top that one. And now I just want to make note of a few other things on the top 10 from Tapology. Number 7. Is the highest rated women's MMA fight, and that was Kat Zagano and Tate. Do either of you have something to say about that one? How about you, Bill? Do you have anything to say about Zagano and Tate?
Yeah, no, I remember that fight. I mean, that was probably the most competitive, like, you know, as far as back and forth, women's MMA is still Sono, you know, but that's probably one of the more entertaining, you know, fights, and the Carmouche Rousey fight was entertaining just because, you know, nobody's ever given Ronda Rousey a legitimate shot or threat, you know, but the Kat Zingano Misha Tate fight, you know, a lot of refs take heat a lot of time. I did think that was a pretty good stoppage. I mean, there wasn't too much more that I think Tate was going to do, But even though, yeah, she could have got beat on a little bit more, but you know, that's one of those where there wasn't a whole lot left, and she took a face dive there, and you know, that was definitely an entertaining fight. It was probably one of the more entertaining women's fights ever. You know, and like I said, it's not saying a heck of a lot because the UFC is so new to the women's division, but you know, that was definitely a great fight.
How about you, Chris?
Yeah, I think that was a coming out party for Zingano. I think Zingano has the strength that is going to give Rousey a challenge. I think the size as well. You know, Carmouche was strong, as we saw the some level of success she had in her fight for the title. And Zingano, I think, presents a different type of problem. Someone who's strong and can push Ron against the cage may have the strength to at least somewhat nullify the judo. I'm not going to go so far as to say she's going to be able to completely nullify the judo. But I think, you know, but as Bill was saying, the fight was entertaining. I think, you know, Tate was winning that fight in the first round, and Zingano coming back and taking it was entertaining and was a surprise for most people, because at that point it was pretty much a given in the minds of most people that Tate was going to go on and win and coach the Ultimate Fighter.
All right. Now, and another note I wanted to make about this was the highest rated fight outside of the UFC was the Alvarez-Chandler fight. That was from Bellator 106. I personally haven't gotten a chance to see it yet. Chris, your thoughts on that fight, and then Bill.
Yeah, I thought it was a pretty entertaining fight. It was a close fight. Good for Bellator, making the best of a bad situation on that card when their pay-per-view fell through. They kind of got a win having that that entertaining a fight on a free TV show after that debacle, if you will. So, but overall, good fight, but not necessarily in my top 5 or 10.
How about you, Bill?
That was one, like I said, I definitely like that fight. I think that one should be, you know, top 5, depending, just again, because of the back and forth, and you know, Chandler was the champ, and like your guy Chris said there, man, that worked out about as well for Bellator as it possibly could have. They wanted that fight seen by as many people as possible, and had it been on a pay-per-view behind, you know, the Tito and Rampage thing, you know, Bellator took a lot of heat for scheduling that fight. They were absolutely using Rampage's and Tito's name to try and get their other stars seen. And that was just, you know, that's what it was. They're not trying to sell you that Tito and Rampage are two of the top guys in the world anymore. They were trying to use that name power because they wanted you to see Alvarez and Chandler. And when that fell through and that came through on Spike TV, you know, that outdrew, I forget what the exact articles were, but that outdrew some of the UFC programming, and that was a huge hit for Bellator. When they do decide to promote that rematch, hopefully they do it in Philadelphia, which is where Alvarez is from. It'd be huge. I mean, the amount of press, the amount of free advertising, free press that they would get, it was just, you know, that was a really, really positive thing for them. And, you know, I remember Dana White posted on one of the Twitter accounts or something, he said something about karma. I'm like, man, that, you know, that turned out about as well for Bellator as it possibly could have turned out for. Because, to be honest with you, if that was on pay-per-view, a lot less people would have seen that fight. You know, that was nothing, a great thing for Bellator.
Now, this one's kind of tricky for you, and I understand if you want to abstain from this, but World Series of Fighting, you've actually worked the promotion, you did referee this year, but where do you see World Series of Fighting as far as the tier of things in the world of MMA? Obviously, USC is number one, but it kind of gets murky after that. Where do you see World Series of Fighting fitting in the world of MMA?
World Series of Fighting is a good promotion. You know, you got Ray Seth over there, you got Boss Rutan, you got a couple of those guys. As far as the talent goes, I mean, it's not hard. It's not a slam against anybody that's, you know, involved with World Series of Fighting. It's like the NFL versus the Canadian Football League versus the Arena Football League. It's not where the top guys are at. Everybody knows. You know, if you're unsigned and you have two contracts hanging in your face, UFC or World Series of Fighting, you know which one you're going to go to. And that's not to say that there aren't guys and World Series of Fighting who couldn't, you know, knock off guys in the UFC. There absolutely are. Absolutely are. You know, but just as far as, you know, they have their stars over in World Series of Fighting. But as far as the, you know, where, as far as where they are on the talent tier, I mean, you're probably, you know, even John Fitch left the UFC to go to, you know, he's over there with World Series of Fighting and got guillotined by Josh Berkman. Well, Josh Berkman had his run in the UFC, and, you know, it's not a slam against anybody to say, hey, you couldn't cut it at the top levels of the UFC. But he couldn't, you know. He even got armbarred by Dustin Hazlett, who is, you know, even mid-range, and he's not in the UFC any longer. And you got these guys over here across the way fighting each other, and it's not a slam at them, but they're just, they are not, you know, they're not fighting the top guys in the world at the moment, so... That's, like I said, not a slam against anybody in there. They have that guy, Georgi Karavakian, I believe his name is. He's the guy's a monster. I think he could definitely go. You know, he choked out Waylon Rowe at the one World Series of Fighting I did in New Jersey, and Waylon had a pretty, you know, successful run in the UFC before he was let go. So, I mean, World Series of Fighting definitely has some talented guys.
How about you, Chris? How do you see World Series of Fighting?
Yeah, I mean, as you kind of said, once you get down below UFC and Bellator, the things kind of get murky. I think World Series of Fighting is probably in line to make a decent challenge against Bellator. I think they have, with the NBC Sports Network, I think they're not going to – that's not as big a spike, but if they do get some good exposure on NBC next year, I think we could see them perhaps get a little bit more money, and maybe they can try to poach a little bit of talent away from Bellator. I'm not going to say the UFC, as Bill said. If you get a contract for UFC or World Series of Fighting, you're going to go to the UFC. But I think that, you know, as Bill was saying, there's some talent in there, and it's a good place for that talent to grow. I think we've seen Nick Newell, who has really started to make a name for himself on World Series of Fighting. He may be somewhere down the line, somewhere that goes in the UFC, or maybe he is the type of star that they try to maintain and put on NBC and really try to make something of it. But overall, I think, you know, it's got its own little niche. It should be able to put on some decent fights and hopefully make some money and be profitable, as long as they don't try to grow too fast, too hard. And, you know, if they don't go down trying to do pay-per-views and that kind of stuff, and just kind of live on NBC Sports, I think they'll be fine.
Now, this one's specifically for you, Bill. During one of the World Series of Fighting fights, you were refereeing, I believe it was one of the Gracies against Meehan. And did you realize just how hurt Gracie was? Because his back was to you. You really couldn't see when he started doing the flare flop, is what it really became to be. Just go to that finish and talk us through it.
Well, you know, Hollis Gracie, he was doing very, very well. It was Derek the Caveman Memon, I believe his name was.
Yes.
Derek was a stand-up guy. I think he was like 15-5 or something like that, with like 12 wins by knockout. It was, you know, he hit hard. I was aware of what this guy was going to try and do. And, you know, this is the one where Hoyce Gracie came online afterwards and threw some heat out there to the guys that they're concentrating on too much other stuff besides jiu-jitsu. You know, I really thought Hollis Gracie could have taken him down, you know, early on in the fight. And, you know, Hollis is a pretty talented heavyweight as far as, you know, submissions go. I really thought he could have taken that guy way out of his element, and he decided to stand with him. And so I'm sitting there at midway, you know, after the first round is over. I'm an observant fan and, you know, person, ref like anybody is, and I thought to myself, man, he's going to try and stand with this guy the whole time. And then all of a sudden, you know, Derek Memon was throwing. He was out of range for a long time, and then he closed the distance on one. And he hit him with one that I really, even now, I didn't think it was that solid of a shot. And I looked back at it afterwards, and it was. It definitely made Hollis's eyes shudder. But in the fight, it hit him, and the fact that Hollis, you know, it didn't hit him on his jaw, so there wasn't that dramatic, like, head snap action. But he hit him up top on top of the head by the temple. And I'm sitting there across the way, and all of a sudden Hollis Gracie turns his back. And, you know, anytime something like that happens, you think, like, eye poke or, you know, groin shot. But I know that didn't happen. So I was like, you know, I got stuck in a middle flash there. I was like, should I close the distance? Should I not? And all of a sudden, you know, he takes two steps and does the flare flop. You know, I read online somebody put on one of the messages where he said he was going to get his gi. So I thought that was pretty funny. He had enough. He was going to get his gi. But, yeah, and then he face-planted. I closed the distance, and, you know, and in less than a half a second, it goes through my head that that was clean, nothing happened. You know, hey, fight's over. And I jumped in, and luckily I made the right call on that, but that was definitely one of – that was probably the most unique fight that I've been in to date, just because of the way that I've never seen a knockout or a reaction like that to a punch.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was really a delayed reaction, like you said. So, yeah, just it was one of those things. And when I saw that you were the referee for that, I was like, that's pretty cool. Because, and you were very quick on that, too. When you say it was only a half a second when you closed the distance, it really was. So, kudos on that. Good finish. I know you guys don't hear that too often, but that was a good stoppage there. Now, another thing I wanted to bring up, Chris, I'll start with you, is the old guys are still going strong. And by the old guys, I mean guys like Vitor Belfort, whether it's TRT or not. We'll talk about that in a second. But Vitor Belfort, Faber, guys like that, even Dan Henderson, whose career might be on a downturn, might be, who knows, ready to retire, that sort of thing. But these guys are still high-quality fighters. At the top of their game. So, well, Belfort, he hasn't looked better in years. So, Chris, how do you feel about these old guys showing the younger guys that they can still go?
I think it's really interesting because, you know, there was a period of time in MMA where the old guys just started getting picked off. And you started to think, okay, well, this is MMA evolving. The new crop of fighters are coming in, and they're really going to eclipse this generation, and there's going to be a step change. And then, well, Vitor Belfort started to come back, and Uriah Faber has never looked better. And it's really interesting. It you know, whether or not it's, you know, as you said, TRT, I don't know. TRT only will do so much. You got to train, and you got to have the will, and you got to have the skill. And at least thus far, you know, guys like Belfort coming back and having the year they had is really, really interesting, and it really puts a different spin as we head into 14. You cannot discount guys so much for age anymore. I mean, Randy Couture was the obvious choice for that several years ago, but now it's all these guys, you know, in their 30s, in their 40s, being dangerous guys. I think it definitely puts the fear of God in some of these younger guys. I'd say, well, maybe these old guys have something that we don't see, and maybe it's just experience. But I'm impressed. I'm looking forward to it. The more fights from these guys.
All right, and how about you, Bill?
All right. Well, as far as the older guys, I have to draw. I have one small grievance. I have to draw the line at old guys with the 37, 38 and above crowd. You know, I can't in good faith link Uriah Faber in with some of the old guard. I have no doubt that he's been at it a while, but he's still riding a little bit of youth there on his side. You know, when I think back to early UFCs, I don't think Tito Ortiz, Vanderlei Silva, Vitor Belfort, and Uriah Faber. You know what I mean? It's just a little bit. He's still got some, but I mean, he does look great. Let's not take anything away from him. He has just been doing it, and he's probably one of the more active, you know, active fighters. That's probably why you feel like you've seen him 20 or 30 times. But yeah, as far as, you know, I still really think with Vitor Belfort, it was probably, I know he wants a rematch with John Jones, and apparently it looking like he's going to get one. But I think last time was a pretty good measuring stick, or pretty good indication how that fight is going to go against any of the top, you know, any of the top younger guys. I mean, yeah, he knocked out Luke Rockhold, you know, he's got a couple other finishes over there in Brazil and stuff like that. But, you know, I would say as far as everybody, the same thing we talked about earlier as far as Vanderlei Silva, everybody likes to revel in the past and see them. Hey, I grew up on that guy. I remember him. He's doing well. And he is. He's doing fantastic. But even his days are numbered. And but as far as he's going now, you know, the TRT, that's everybody's got their own opinion on that. You know, how well would he be able to do if he wasn't able to train, you know, with some assistance? You know, mind you, keeping him in mind, with where everybody else is at. It's not that's a big confusion about TRT. People think that he's like, you know, all elevated levels. Basically, all that does is bring you in line with where a 27 or 28-year-old guy is at. You know, it doesn't give you any special, you know, power up and above that guy. You're just on his same playing field, you know, chemically, biologically, you know, or, you know. But, yeah, I don't know. I think it's good for the sport to see, you know, some of the older guys coming through. But even Vitor's days are numbered. You know, yeah, if he would lose a rematch against John Jones, where does he go? What's after that for him? You know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's very true. I think everybody I mean, the last fight that he had against Henderson, everybody was saying he's the scariest guy, regardless of weight class. So, but where do you go if he does lose against Jones again? That's a very good point. Now, TRT, you explained a little bit there. What exactly – so it just brings your levels in line with a younger fighter? Is it – I always thought TRT had something to do with the fact that you were on steroids and then it got your levels back together, something to that effect. So, first of all, Bill, just explain what TRT does. Now, that's testosterone replacement therapy.
Okay, what testosterone replacement therapy is, when you age, when you progressively age, nobody can stop it. You know, I mean, your levels might hang around, you know, longer than another guy who, you know, is not doing combat sports or anything like that, but your levels, your free-range testosterone just decreases. I'm not a doctor. I forget what the certain levels are. You know, we test everybody, not everybody, but we test a lot of, you know, when the top show comes through here in PA, we test to see where their free-range testosterone is at, and it needs to be within a certain limit, okay? And obviously a guy who's 25, 24, 25 is going to have a different level. You know, you're not going to say, hey, a 37-year-old man is at this, and then you're not going to look at a 25-year-old kid and go, oh, my God, his levels are so much higher than the 37-year-old. Yeah, no kidding. You know, it's just what testosterone replacement therapy does is, you know, for whatever reason, and this is where Vitor runs into trouble in the United States a lot, he got popped for steroids. So they attribute his lower testosterone levels as far as his body producing to that. And the way they look at it, that therapeutic exemption use for him, is that he's trying to catch something up that he did to himself because, you know, he got caught using steroids before. That's not a secret. But they're saying that the reason that his body produces less is because of something he did to himself, and now he wants something to fix it. And that's why he runs into a lot of problems in, like, say, Nevada, where they issue, you know, the therapeutic exemptions all the time, but not to him. You know, I mean, he still has to go through a whole thing with Keith Kaiser and state his case. And, you know, it's case-by-case basis. You know, it's basically like court. You get there, you say, hey, here's why I should have it. Here's what I got going on. And the fact that he did get caught, you know, earlier, and that's why he catches a lot of heat online. I don't know if you ever read up on that online, but, you know, there's a reason he fights in Brazil a lot. It's because he has no problem getting licensed in Brazil to fight. But when you come to the United States, you know, you got to go through a couple more steps, and they look at a couple more things. And, yeah, that TRT, what it does is it brings you in line to where, you know, where you naturally should be. Okay, so if you are a little bit low for whatever reason, it brings you in line with where you should be. Because I think we had the whole Nate Marquardt, you know, episode here in Pennsylvania when he was supposed to fight, I want to say it was Rick Story.
Yeah, it was
Rick Story. Yeah, he was out of range. I mean, just a tiny, tiny bit. And I think I even remember reading somewhere he was back. He's back within normal levels the day after, but that's a day too late. You know what I mean? And, you know, Greg, my boss, Greg Serb, he's a stickler for that, and he's not going to budge under any circumstances, you know. And it'd be interesting to see. I won't get into the politics of it, but I'm not sure whether Greg would or would not, you know, if they tried to schedule a title fight here in Pennsylvania for Vitor Belfort, he'd have to go through the whole thing as far as, you know, filing for, you know, a use exemption and all that fun stuff. And, yeah, that's why I'm glad my boss handles that, and I don't. I don't even want to be involved in any of that.
Well, I think there's a little, even on my own part, misconceptions about exactly what TRT does. So thanks for clearing that up there. Now, just this week, some news came out that Antonio Bigfoot Silva is suspended, and he had to forfeit his fight of the night to Mark Hunt because of this very thing. Now, Omega, I'm not sure if you know much about it, but what are your thoughts on that? Now, he's actually fired back, and he's going to go after the UFC doctor.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I mean, from what I read, it sounded to me like he said he decided to change up his TRT regimen just before the fight, and then he got elevated, and it just sounded like poor decision making on his part to try to change stuff up ahead of a big fight like that. I'm not going to get it. Again, I'm not a doctor either. I don't know if he should have been taking another shot or didn't or what. But knowing that there's a risk involved with this type of therapy, knowing that it was knowing he was going to be tested, I don't know why I would chance changing something up that close to a fight. So you know, he can try to put it back on the doctor all he wants. I think that's silly. He claims he's did everything right, and maybe that's true for a guy who's just walking around going to a desk job, but not a professional athlete who's going to be tested for testosterone. And I just think he made a mistake, and he's going to have to pay for it, unfortunately.
All right. Now, I just wanted to – Bill, this is for you. Talk about the Antonio Silva situation if you wanted to first. I'm sorry.
That's fine. Dana White has even gone on record, and he said before, he said, you know what, maybe with all this TRT stuff, he goes, maybe if you need this, maybe the game has just passed you by. Maybe it's time to hang it up, you know. I can kind of agree with him a little bit on that, but then again, I don't make the ultimate rules. I enforce the rules that the athletic commission's come out with. It's not my position or place to say, you know, what should or shouldn't be. If they say that there's a therapeutic exemption, that's fine. The Bigfoot Silva, his main thing is he's saying, hey, I did what the doctor told me. It's not my fault. I kind of agree with Chris there. It's like, you know, that's the Barry Bonds excuse. You know, hey, I'm drinking this milkshake. I don't know what's in it, and I'm hitting the ball 550 feet, you know, 80 times a year. I don't know what's in it. You know, you need to be on top of that a little bit. If you're putting it into your body, you know, whether you're shooting it, whether you're eating it, you need to be on top of what the heck is going on in your body, you know, exactly what it is, exactly how your body's going to react to it. And, you know, we were talking about the TRT thing again. There's a certain threshold. You can test between this and this, and that's it. It's a fine line. There's not a lot of wiggle room. It's between this and this. And when they went to test him, you know, he probably thought he was going to be okay. But like your guy said, that's you know, you're not at a desk job. It's your job. You know how widely paid attention this thing is. You know you're going to get tested. You need to be absolutely sure that you're within where you're supposed to be in. You know, and especially changing stuff up between the lot. Yeah, that's crazy. Why would you, you know, you don't know how these things are going to react. It's not like a weight on a scale. You don't know how these things are going to react in your body. You shouldn't be changing anything up before, you know, a major fight. You know, you need to know how that's going to treat your body a long, long way out. So, there's the rules. They are what they are. They're black and white. You know, he tested outside the range. That's it. I really don't see, you know, he can go after anybody he wants. He's still going to have to, you know, he's going to have to serve the suspension, whatever they put down on him.
All right, and I just wanted to ask you, Bill, what do you got coming up in the new year as far as some MMA, some refereeing assignments? What do you have coming up?
Well, I'll tell you what, December is probably one of the slower months because of Christmas, and promoters are pretty smart knowing that, you know, people aren't out to spend $200 on a night MMA around December 20th, you know. But after January, Super Bowl weekend, we have, you know, UFC and Newark, New Jersey. They're bringing that to Super Bowl weekend there. You know, normally that show is done out in Las Vegas, but this year, being that it's out in there, you know, I would assume at one point they were trying to do Chris Weidman or John Jones on that New Jersey card on Super Bowl weekend, kind of get everything buzzing, try and get a little jump start in New York, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I believe in April, because of injuries and stuff, I believe they scheduled that John Jones Glover Teixeira fight down at the Maryland Arena in Baltimore. And I know Pat Pinnell and the commission sometimes reaches out to Greg for help with that. So those are the two bigger shows that I'm looking at probably early on next year. There's no saying that I'm going to get assigned to them. We'll see. You know, I've got to keep on paying my dues, taking my time. I still have only been at this a year and a half, 2 years. You know, I've been on Bellator, I think, 3 times, World Series of Fighting once. So, you know, I'm pretty happy with how quickly I'm progressing as far as the game goes. You know, it could have been a time where I was around for 10, 12 years before you get your shot at, like, the next stage of fighting. But, you know, it happened for me pretty quick, so I'm pretty pleased with that. And, you know, I have all my little local shows that I like doing and stuff, and I get to be on the scene where I fought, and, you know, I still run into coaches and fighters all the time that I've crossed paths with. So there's a couple of things I got coming up here soon.
Oh, good, good. Good to hear. So good luck getting assigned to a UFC card. I know that's a pretty big deal for you, so good luck with that. Now, one of the last things I'm going to bring up in our year in review, of course, this year, UFC made the switch from FX to Fox Sports One. Chris, first you. How do you think the transition has gone so far for UFC?
I think they wish it had gone better. I think Fox Sports One has not taken off like they would have wanted. I think Fox had hoped it would be more of a challenger to ESPN than it certainly is. Other than UFC, I don't tune into that station for anything. I know they have some basketball stuff coming, and perhaps when soccer season comes around, they might get some stuff. But as far as the production goes, it's still high quality. UFC doesn't skimp on that so much. I'm not a big fan of the desk work, you know, going back to the commentary desk, switching like to do. I yearn for the days when we actually saw the preliminary fights, when fights went short, instead of kicking it back to the studio and talking about stuff. From a fan perspective, I think it's not been good, or it certainly hasn't been good as it was historically. I think it's probably good for the Fox and UFC relationship, and certainly UFC having such a prominent role on the cable channel is good for them, but I think we've lost a little something in the translation.
How about you, Bill? How do you see the transition for UFC?
Well, you know, honestly, Fox Sports is where you want to be. That's a huge promotional machine. Even to this day, I hate to say it, but the casual fan is what drives mainstream MMA. The guy, mm-hmm. you know, the guy, it does. The hardcore fans generally do not drive. You know, it's a huge, huge core of very casual fans that tune in. And to me, being on Fox Sports 1 versus like FX is the difference between being promoted by the Disney Channel or local PBS. You want that promotional machine behind you. Just, you know, if they air a commercial for an upcoming event on, because they still have the Fox Fight Nights, you know, and stuff like that on Fox, you know, they just had that one with all of Team Alpha Male on it, you know. When they run a commercial on Fox Sports 1 to promote that show, or they run a commercial on FX in the past to promote that show, I guarantee it has to be 4-1 to see a commercial when you're talking about Fox, you know, and that's something that, like I say, when it's a numbers game. They want as many people, you know, they talk about, you know, how many people were tuning in, how many people watch this, and that's how they sell their advertising, and that's how they get the money for the advertisers. Say, hey, from the hours 8 to 10, we had the male demographic from 18 to 49 at, you know, 2 million viewers on Fox, or, you know, whatever the numbers might be. But while you're right, it's gone a bit corporate as far as the sports goes, but you know what? Like we said earlier, 51.1% of people who tune in prefer this type of production, and it's casual fans, you know, because they don't know. They weren't around for, you know, a lot of the old school stuff. They're tuning in because they saw this new sport that's on, you know, to a lot of people it's still new, and they see an advertisement for this, and because it's on Fox, it's just, you know, and you hear what people call the Monday Night Football music. That's the Fox Sports music. They play that for every show But yeah, they definitely corporated up. They've had a blueprint. Hey, here's what works for our football programming. So now here's what people they you know, the general fan likes to throw back to the desk and seeing Chael Sonnen and Rashad Evans and Brian Stann and John Anik, I believe his name is. They like that sort of thing. You know, I mean, maybe the hardcore fan doesn't, but like I was saying earlier, hardcore fan does not really drive this business. It's the casual tune in when it's on Fox. Oh my gosh, they do pay per views too. Okay, I'll buy that too. That's the guy driving the sport, not the hardcore fan.
All right. Now, this one kind of hits you at home. I'll start with Chris again. And this is, reffing, is this worse than ever or the same as it ever was? Chris, you're the one who came up with this idea. So what do you mean by that, and how do you see it?
Well, you know, there's always the doom and gloom about reffing. And is it horrible than ever? Does stuff need to change? There's always room for improvement in any system. Nothing's perfect. There's probably things that could be done, better training, that kind of stuff. That would help. But realistically, reffing is no better or worse than it ever has been. You still have people who make judgments. You still have situations that arise where it's a judgment call and you have to make split-second decisions. And there's human error and that kind of stuff. Reffing, in my mind, is no worse or different. All we're seeing is more fights. We're seeing, you know, more events, more stuff, more opportunities for things to go awry. And that's really all we're seeing overall, in my mind.
How about you, Bill? How do you see it? Now, of course, you're a little biased because you are a man in stripes. Well, you don't really wear stripes, but you know what I mean. You're a referee, so how do you see it? How do you see your colleagues out there, your peers, that sort of thing? Where do you see reffing?
Okay, well, I would say, generally, because of the attention the sport's got, because of the attention that bad calls have gotten, I would say that refereeing has probably never been at a higher level. Yeah, I'm not saying you haven't seen some bad calls, but as far as these, you know, athletic commissions putting somebody in there who is new or doesn't really have experience in the sport, they're realizing that, hey, if I do that and something goes wrong, I'm going to have to answer for that. So therefore, they're seeking out qualified individuals, you know. Wait, I mean, I'm not saying you haven't seen a bad call this year, but if you look at some of the truly atrocious calls from, you know, pre-UFC 50, whatever it was, I mean, there was a lot of people in there who didn't understand the sport. They jump in just at the sign of somebody getting knocked down. They would jump in to stop a fight. You don't see that anymore, you know, because the referees they're realizing, hey, it's a big deal if we blow something. It's not something, and it's being seen by a lot of people now. It's not just some little house show, you know, back in the back corner of a Kmart parking lot. I'm on pay-per-view this week. If I don't know what the heck I'm doing, you know, it's going to be seen by a lot of people, and I'm going to look like a freaking idiot. So, you know, I believe that the referees, you know, referees' calls are what they are. They're judgment calls, you know. But as far as the education of, and this is going by the numbers, this isn't any specific referee, this isn't just by the numbers, the level of educated referee and the amount of experience in there. You know, whether you're a fan of Steve Mazzagatti or somebody like that or not, which I think he's fine, by the way. You know, Dana White has a grudge against him, but whatever. From 5 years ago to today, how many more matches has Steve Mazzagatti seen, and how much more experience has he gotten? He's a more experienced, more educated referee in that cage today than he was 5 years ago. But, I mean, I really think the level of officiating has gone up. You know, judging is still, I mean, that's a tough beast. You know, I don't even touch that. I don't even touch judging because there's a lot open there to, you know, it's to be interpreted and, you know. But as far as officiating, you know, referees are, you know, you're seeing a lot of guys who have a lot more experience in the sport now. So I would say by the numbers, it's never been at a higher level. You know, yeah, occasionally you still have somebody in there who you might not think the world of. But, you know, you look at the guys that do Bellator, like Jason Herzog, I think, is one of them. You know, Mike Beltran is another one, the guy with the mustache and all that fun stuff. These guys are just seeing more and more and more matches, and they're seeing more and more situations every time, and you're going to get better over time. So, yeah, like I said, I think we're at a higher level. some may disagree, but you're not seeing a lot of the crazy stoppages that you used to see back in the days of, you know, say a Cecil Peoples era or something like that. I know he caught a lot of heat online for a lot. You don't see stuff like that. I mean, not a whole heck of a lot of anything.
All right. Now, my final question as we wrap up the year in review is, I'll start with Chris again. What do you think was the biggest moment or the biggest story in 2013? Go ahead, Chris.
I think without a doubt, I think the biggest story was Anderson Silva getting knocked out by Chris Weidman. I quite frankly broke the internet. It was one of those moments you'll always think back to. And whether or not you believe that Weidman got lucky or Anderson Silva didn't take Weidman seriously, it happened, and it was huge. It was absolute surprise for most people. I mean, there were people calling for Weidman to win, but certainly not in that manner. It was just a momentous occasion in mixed martial arts to see the greatest of all time fall. And I think, without a doubt for me, that was the biggest story of the year.
All right. How about you, Bill?
No, agree 100%. And, you know, it might not have been as big a deal if Weidman had taken him down and just outgrinded him for five rounds, which, you know, everybody's kind of – people who thought he was going to win probably thought that's how he was going to do it. The fact that he went out, stood toe-to-toe, you know, I think he did take him down the one time, but ultimately the fact that he knocked him out is kind of what, you know, he beat Silva at his own game, you know, which, you know, I think that's what really put the boards up. You know, it is MMA's, you know, Mike Tyson, Buster Douglas moment. You know, Chris Weidman, Dana White did not want to give him that title shot. I don't know if you guys remember that. I don't think it was for a second, because he didn't think Chris Weidman was good enough. He hadn't promoted him to the level that he wanted to promote him to yet, to make him the household name. I'm pretty sure Dana White would have wanted him to win two more matches so he could get his name out there. But you know what? I think injuries came into play with that. And he put Chris Weidman in there before Chris Weidman was really what you would call a pay-per-view name. You know, if you remember Chris Weidman, now don't cry for him, but I think he made $20,000 to fight and $20,000 to win, to knock out the greatest fighter of all time. Trust me, there was some more money behind the scenes that, trust me, he wasn't hurt, you know. But he definitely, you know, and that definitely was not the name power that Dana White wanted to go with. He didn't have anybody at that moment who was left. I forget who the person was that was originally supposed to fight Silva, who got hurt, and that's when Weidman stepped in. But, Weidman was only 9-0 at the time. I think his biggest win was against, like, Damian Maia or something like that, and even that was short notice, and he struggled to grind that one out. But the fact that he stepped in is what the casual fan would consider a no-name, because of the promotional aspect of the sport hadn't been there yet. A no-name stepped in and knocked out Anderson, you know, like you said, the greatest fighter of all time. And I think that's what made it the story of the year. You know, had they been able to give Weidman another couple fights and he would have taken out another couple top names, I think people might have been like, hey, a legitimate challenger beat the champ. But instead, it really appeared that a guy came out of left field at 9-0, completely unwarranted, and beat one of the greatest fighters of all time, which, believe it or not, is probably it's great for the rematch. And I think, Dana White's bumping the prices $5 on the pay-per-view next one, so he's going to recoup some of that money that he lost from that last fight, you know.
All right. So, Bill, where can people find you if they want to stay in touch with you through the social media networks?
I'm on Facebook. Bill Bookwaller, if you type it on Facebook, pretty much at this point in the game, I've got mutual friends all over the place. So if somebody, you know, if you look up my name, chances are you're going to be a mutual friend with somebody who's a friend with me. You know, just link up that way. I accept all friend requests unless it's from, you know, some something that just doesn't seem right. You know, one of those hot, creepy Russian girls with one picture of themselves, and they're like, hey, want to meet? Send me money. Pick them up, you know. Stuff like
yes.
that. Other than that, I'll accept pretty much any friend request, you know, whether you like me, hate me, ask me, say something good, say something bad. Just double quote on Facebook. Picture of me refereeing a fight.
All right. Well, I thank you for your time. We're going to have you back, I'm sure, sometime in 2014 to talk about MMA. It's always a pleasure to have you, Bill.
All right. Thanks for having me, Dean. You guys take it easy.
Okay. You have a good night now. All right. So, Chris, that was Bill Bookwater. That was our MMA year in review.
That was a good conversation.
Yes, it was. I enjoy looking back at all the things that made this year special. And I didn't say what my story of the year is, but I have to agree with you guys. Silva going down. And it was really the manner that he went down, as Bill was saying, to his point. The fact he was just joking around, but that's Anderson Silva, and he's even come out on the preview show saying that he's not going to change his game. This is what he does. So
yeah, well, I think he might take it a little bit more seriously this time. I really do.
I think you awoke someone. Like I said, I think the last fight that he took actually competitively was Dan Henderson, and how long ago was that?
Yeah, it was a while. I can't remember, but...
But I really think, and then he just got into this, not really complacency, but he just knew he was on a different level. And I think if he took the Weidman fight a little more seriously and he wasn't goofing around and he wasn't... See, that's... People saying that was the fight of the year or whatever, what it was, and it's actually winning in the poll, not as fight of the year, but as KO of the year, which it should, because it's a very important KO. For the sillies is what I'm talking about, but it wasn't really a Silva fight. It was Silva. I mean, that first round. If you go back to that first round, he wasn't really engaging. He did escape a submission attempt. That heel hook was in early on that Weidman had. So he escaped, but he was still wasn't. He certainly wasn't taking Weidman's stand up seriously. And that's what cost him, especially in the second round when he acted as if he was hurt, and then two punches later he's down for the count. So.
Oh, by the way, you are hurt. But yeah, that was Anderson Silva. I think it was complacency. I think it was him. That's his style, yeah. But that's you did not see Silva fighting up to his potential, to his skill, to what we know he can do. And if we had seen Anderson Silva do that and Weidman beat him, we'd still be talking about it, but we wouldn't be talking about it in the same vein.
Yeah, and I can't wait for the 28th because that's going to be a different Anderson Silva, one that we haven't seen in at least, I think, 4 to 5 years. So that being said, we're going to be right back on the other side with Dan as we talk about a few wrestling-related topics, but right now, it's the Mystery Men with This Is How the Magic Happens here on HIAC Talk Radio. We'll be right back.
Magic Happens with the Mystery Men on Hell in a Cell Talk Radio. You can buy their album again, $9, only $9, at lucha-rock.com.
Or lucharock.bandcamp.com. Both places are a good place to look for it and to purchase it. And you can actually, on the Bandcamp site, you can actually play these very songs that we highlight each week as we go get a soda, go recharge for the rest of the episode. If people want to know why we play the Mystery Men, besides the fact that we like the Mystery Men, sometimes we got to take a break. Right, Dan?
Yes, I'm sorry. I didn't know you wanted a rebuttal. Yeah, no, sometimes you just need to stand up, exhale, get a drink or two.
But, Dan, you know what else?
Yeah.
On Saturday, were you ready for the Cage of Death?
No.
Blood, pride, survive. You're forsaken, your bones are breaking. Yeah. Like the Nazi, like the tribes that come to battle on this night. The ring, the field, the field of war, that's where they lay the law.
Lay the law, once again, prepare for war. This is the real, an eye for an eye, to live and to die, a free of denying.
To blood, to pride, survive.
That's right, Dan. Of course, Saturday night was the 15th annual CZW Cage of Death, actually from the Flyer Skate Zone in Voorhees, New Jersey. And Dan, it was quite the event, capped off by, of course, the Cage of Death. Now, before we get there, the returning savior of CZW, Chris Hero, started things off. Because, frankly, he had to get to Ring of Honor. And he started things off taking on Drew Gulak in a technical clinic.
Yeah, it was a technical clinic. I don't think anybody expected nobody expected the world title match to start off the show, but I don't think anybody expected that kind of match out of these two. To even try to set the pace for that kind of show, I wouldn't want to go first.
Certainly not. And Tommy Dreamer apparently has matchmaking abilities. And
what is he there?
I have no idea. A shoot or kayfabe, I have no idea.
Okay.
I really don't. I've seen him around. I know he's backstage. I know he helps out, but I haven't asked. And frankly, I don't need to know. So he does what he does there. I don't know why Maven didn't make the call. He's the vice president.
Well, it certainly started to show off with a pop.
It certainly did.
You know what I mean?
Hero, of course, came up a little bit short, but that's because. But then the return of Masada, Dan, coming out and staking claim to what he feels this is.
I don't disagree with him. That match where Gulak became champion was brutal, long, and amazing.
And well, considering his physical...
the fact that he's on one wheel.
Pretty, yeah.
Let's just cut the story. Let's just cut to the chase. He's got one good leg and one half bad leg, if not more than half. Again, I've said it on the air many times, being in this situation before. I don't know how he's walking seemingly with barely a limp. So it will be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yes, and I can't wait for that. Now,
I can't wait for that. Go ahead.
The next match, Dan, was the scramble match. There were a lot of changes up and to including the event. Joe Gacy wasn't even originally scheduled for this match. However, he came out victorious over top of Chuck Taylor, Azrael, A.R. Fox, Andrew Everett, the former Chief of Kid, and Tony Nese. Fantastic match. For my money, that was the match of the night.
I was about to say that other than the Cage of Death, basically based on brutality, that scramble was the match of the night for me, period.
And Joe Gacy coming out victorious, that was a great moment, and the crowd there, the energy, as he blocked the low main pain and got the splash, Joe Gacy is your winner, and now, hopefully the momentum goes into 2014 for Joe.
I'm hoping, because I like to see Joe on the winning end more than the losing end. When he came flying through the air, Joe is not a small guy, but he's also not a huge dude. He's a bigger guy, though. And when he came flying through the air, I thought he was going to kill everybody.
Whatever the case is, that was my...
Amazing.
If you
amazing.
check out that match, that's for sure. Now, one of the misfires of the show, perhaps the only misfire of the show, was the next match, Dan, and that was Freight Train taking on Greg Excellent. Of course, this was a relaxed rules match. Not much more you can say then.
You know what? I'm going to... Learning from my mistakes, since we're talking about that, I'm just going to say that I like Greg Excellent, and he is entertaining as hell.
Yes,
and
I agree.
And I'm going to pretty much skip the rest of it.
I will as well. Perhaps on After Midnight, Emil J. and I will go in, because he's going to defend this. I already know Emil is
how
a huge...
Somebody that punches like that.
He is a huge Freight Train guy.
Dean, you've seen me take a bump.
I unfortunately have.
I do it better.
I am scarred. Perhaps you're not getting the whole $5 wrestling thing. Maybe
perhaps,
that's it. Maybe
perhaps.
That's not our thing, Dan.
Maybe.
But moving right along. We had Kimberly. She defeated Christina Van Eyre. You know, something that happened after the match. Of course, Kimberly was successful in winning. Has never looked better in her new ring gear. But yeah, she was stuck in the head with the skewers.
Stuck? She was stabbed, dude. She got assaulted after that match.
She certainly did. She wasn't too happy about it over at the tables. I'll say that much. Now, the next match was for the Tag Team Championship. That's Blackout, the reigning and defending champions. They defeated the Juicy Product. Dan, how do you see this? And do you see Blackout giving up these titles anytime soon? I really can't see it.
I was about to say that all the time I've seen them perform, I really don't see anybody in the company right now beating those guys.
I'm going to give you something to think about after this, but let's just move on with our
thoughts.
Now, a contenders match, apparently. Now, Bandito, they didn't say this. I don't know if they – did they say anything on commentary why Bandito wasn't there or anything?
If they said it, they just said Bandito not here.
Bandito didn't say
he was sick or whatever the deal was.
He has a neck injury. Of course, the original match was going to be the Beaver Boys taking on Azrael and Bandito for a number one contendership. However, the Beaver Boys took on the returning colony from Chikara. So that was a surprise. That was a nice moment.
That was entertaining. I'd never seen those guys perform before, and that was...
You've never seen the colony.
I know who they were. I've never seen a full match. I've seen, you know, clips and pictures, but I had never seen a full match, and I was pleasantly entertained. I loved it. It was great. I love that team. They're great.
Oh, yes. Colony has been various places... Always entertaining, and that's an entertaining match.
The reason I was on board for the start, because when they came out, they got a huge pop.
Oh, of course.
It was great.
It's the colony, Dan.
I did not know.
Yeah, but yeah, definitely. I was looking for something, and I got.
Oh, yeah. No, and you know, even though Bandito that was injured, that match, I believe, and it's only because I've only seen one colony match, but I don't doubt their skill at all, but I believe you can put the Beaver Boys in with most anybody, and they'll have an amazing match.
Well, speaking of the Beaver Boys, they will be facing Blackout January 11th then, as a result of winning that match. So it will be finally the Beaver Boys getting a two-on-two match against Blackout. So we have that coming up January 11th.
I don't know, man.
And that's at CZW Answering the Challenge is what they are calling it. Drew Gulak will also be taking on Lucky 13. We'll get to what Lucky 13 did. He was a sole survivor in the main event. We also have Danny Havoc taking on Arrow Boy. So those are some things to look forward to coming up January 11th. Now, getting back to Cage of Death, Chris Dickinson defeated Davey Richards. Davey Richards' time on the indies is over. He is now in WWE Next. So that's
really
it. See? Yes, they made their debut. He has a new name. He is Tommy Billingsley or something of that nature.
Uh-oh.
It's recalling, of course. They are called the American Bulldogs.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So there you go. But Chris Dickinson, this very well could have been his last independent match. Not Chris Dickinson, Davey Richards, his last independent match. Now, Dickinson was your winner in very convincing fashion. A lot of people are saying that this was their favorite match of the card. How did you see it, Dan?
It was tough for me to pick. Knowing that you have a podcast here, I'm like, oh, gee, what would I say would be the match of the night? This one was close. Dickens is becoming one of my favorite performers, period.
I'm telling you, Dan, if you have a chance to check out the Dickinson Summers match from On Point Wrestling, that would easily be your choice for match of the year.
Hands down. No, that was all I was going to say, but you'd say that would sway me from the other Bandito and Azrael from and Beaver Boys from what was the show?
New Heights.
Yeah, New Heights. That's what we're talking about. You say that would easily sway my idea?
Yes, easily. 100%.
Making a note right now to watch it.
Yes, you can get it on smartmarkvideo.com. They have the VOD.
Dickinson. Done.
I believe the video on demand is $9.99.
That's worth it.
That's
definitely worth it.
Mute the commentary. Now, moving right along, Dan. Ohio is for Killers defeated, and that was, of course, the Christ Brothers and Nevaeh. They defeated DJ Hyde. He's still now as young to me, damn it, and Biff Busick in quite the encounter.
Sozio?
He's still Niles Young. So how did you see that match? The finish was particularly brutal. A lot of headshots there.
How do you still get away with headshots like that in wrestling is amazing.
No comment.
I'm not criticizing you. I'm saying literally. I don't. How you're still standing and whatever.
How you're not drooling.
How you're not a banana after that.
Sipping soup from a straw. Exactly. But do you have much to say about the match itself? Or?
No, it was brutal. I can't really say anything more than that. You could tell there was a lot of hate in that ring.
Alex Colon, the defending Wired champion. Defeated Shane Strickland. I got distracted during this match, so I really can't comment on it.
I really, really thought Strickland was going to take it.
No title changes, Dan. I think we can say this now.
Yeah, we
can say it. There were no title changes on Cage of Death, the biggest show of the year, so I think that's noteworthy. But there weren't any title changes last year either. So there you go.
So it's not that noteworthy.
Yeah. When you come to think of it, now the Cage of Death. Of course, last week we had Drew Blood and Matt Trema on discussing their role in this match as part of the Forgotten Ones. Now, of course, Lucky 13 was your final entrant. Your sole survivor is what I meant.
Yes,
and he was helped along the way by CZW original Sick Nick Mondo. What did you think of? Now, where I was sitting, I was sitting with a few people, and
I saw you guys a couple times. Yeah,
the biggest.
Did you feel it?
I did, but I think the biggest problem that CZW had is because they're such a different company from the time that Mondo left, and a lot of different people have come through during these past 10 years. It's been a decade since he's been gone.
Yeah.
I think some people didn't know who the hell he was. Some of the newer fans. In fact, I'll quote here, who the hell was that?
I know. Do I know who said that?
Possibly. Who the hell was that? And I said, it's Sick Nick Mondo. Sick Nick Mondo. He's back.
I could not. Is he back? Back?
No.
That's what I thought.
From the best I understand, it was a one-time thing. Now, a lot coming out of this, of course, Nick Mondo returning, helping out Rory Mondo. And not helping out Rory Mondo. He helped out the Nation of Intoxication. But after Mondo...
Kind of helped Rory Mondo.
Yeah, apparently, Rory Mondo, and we've had him on before... I wanted to get him on last week. He was busy. But apparently Mondo wanted to take weed whacker shots in this match, and he wanted to do this and that. And Nick said, hey, you've done enough, pal. You've done enough, and I respect you. And with that, apparently Mondo has wrestled his last match. All he ever wanted was his favorite wrestler to come back and to earn his favorite wrestler's respect. And apparently that has been accomplished. Sick Nick Mondo and Rory Mondo, and quite a moment, I do have to say.
I could not believe what I was watching. When I saw him, I was like, is that Nick Mondo? Like, I could not believe my eyes. And, you know, I was kind of hoping it would be a permanent thing, but after 10 years, there's no way. Can you come back after 10 years? There's no way.
Well, you can come back and train. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. That was uncalled for, Dan. Now,
I'm not saying nothing.
You shouldn't.
You be the bad guy this week. All yours.
But anyway, No. But what I mean is...
It was a great moment.
I think if he wanted to come back, because he was young when he retired, he was like 23, 24.
I was going to say, he was 24, so he's not like he's beyond ring...
I think he's moved on to different things. Of course, if you ever saw the documentary Unscarred, the life story of Nick Mondo, you would know he's very artistic. He is a filmmaker. So he's moved on to different things. And you have to realize it's very odd because people were cheering the fact that this icon of old CZW came back. But one of the reasons he left the business was he didn't want to fall off tractor trailers anymore. He didn't want to take weed whacker shots, and he didn't want to do that lifestyle anymore. It was too much for him. And he realized, longevity-wise, he had to stop doing it. So you have all these fans that are cheering the fact that he came back, and he even said in the promo after the match, hey, you don't have to do this anymore. You know, this is why I left. So I think that was kind of an ironic thing.
It was still, like, I can only imagine what the feeling was between the two of them in the ring at the time, because I just, you know, stared at the TV with my mouth wide open. Like, oh, I can't believe this is happening.
Now, let's talk a little bit about this match. Of course,
oh yes,
some
vicious
bumps in this. Drew Blood, I thought he was dead. And I see Drew Blood and Devin go up on that scaffold that was across the two spans of the cage, I'm like, one of them's going down, and it's not going to be pretty. That was number one on my thought. And then when I realized it was Drew, I'm like, I hope my friend's okay, because I don't want to see him get hurt, and hurt badly. And it looked like he was hurt very badly.
Was he walking? Later that night?
He was talking like nothing happened.
Yeah, bro. No, it was cool.
I'm saying I didn't actually see him after the match, but later on, about 4 in the morning, we did speak through Facebook, and everything seemed all right.
Wow.
And then the second bump that I thought looked terrible from my point of view was when Rory pushed off Danny Havoc through the glass and the,
dude,
Christmas balls. And
it looks so brutal on TV.
I'm sure.
Oh, and the other one that looked brutal was...
Well, Matt.
That one, because...
He missed. He bounced off... I talked to Matt about this, and he said he bounced... He hit so hard, he bounced off the floor.
Yeah,
he hits and bounces.
I was talking to him after, because the first thing I did when the show was over is I sent him a message like, "Are you alive?" And a couple hours later, like 3, 4 in the morning... maybe even later than that because I was still up, I got a reply, and I started talking. I was like, "You realize you didn't hit the table. You missed." He goes, "I don't know what I hit. All I know is that I hit hard." And the fact that he told me, and this is like less than 5 hours after the show, that the only thing that hurt was his tailbone.
Yeah.
Is amazing. I mean, they got a great – I don't know if you saw the pay-per-view version of it. But when he falls, they get him from the ground down, and you can see clearly on the camera that about his shoulder hit the table, the rest of it floor.
But he bounced. Lyle was the one who told him that, because Lyle Williams, of course, the retiring CZW photographer, ringside photographer.
That was cool, too.
Yeah, great way to start things out, and he had no idea that was happening, by the way. He told him that he bounced off. He saw and he bounced off the. It's not a floor. You have to realize that's ice underneath there.
Yeah.
Well,
it's also there's also a wooden floor they put over top of the ice.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's the wooden floor, but ice, and it's just not pretty to think about falling on. There's no padding in CZW.
No, obviously.
But
how those guys, I mean, there is great, I mean, one of my favorite shots of the show, obviously you didn't see, but Matt getting his head just grated over this barbed wire, and the camera is 3 inches from his face. And you can see his skin tearing. Just...
Certainly lived up to the brutality, so Cage of Death is in the books, and it was quite an event, Dan, and like I said, that takes us to answering the challenge, and as a result, I suppose, of winning and being the sole survivor, Lucky 13 gets his chance at Drew Gulak.
I didn't expect that.
Well, the thing that I wanted to bring up, Dan, is you were saying you didn't see anybody who could take Blackout. Just here's food for thought. And okay. I have absolutely nothing to go on with this.
Uh-huh.
I have no insider information in quotations or anything like that.
Uh-huh.
But Matt Tremont, Drew Blood, I think that would be a tag team for the future of CZW, and I would love to see it. The Forgotten Ones live on through Tremont.
Yeah, but Forgotten Ones, but you know what? I'll just let that sit for a while. I'll tell you what I feel later.
I love it, and I could see them making some strides there.
Yeah, but you have a team that's been together for a long time against two guys that haven't been together for a long time, you know?
Well, But you're talking about the Bulldozer, you're talking about Drew Blood, two guys who have bled for this company, two guys who have certainly... they deserve a lot, Dan.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm not disagreeing with anything you're saying.
But that being as it may, Omega, are you ready to join back for some WWE TLC discussion as well as the Raw wrap-up?
Sure.
All right, now, starting things off, Fandango in the TLC kickoff defeated Dolph Ziggler. Either of you have anything to say about that?
Yeah, I will. I think it was stupid.
All right.
Yeah.
Quality analysis by Dan?
Well, you know what? Here. Here, fine. I'll elaborate. I'll clear it up, smartass. I'm nothing against Fandango. I don't hate his gimmick. Everybody who, he's just stupid. It's not stupid. If somebody's entertained by it, obviously they're leaving him on TV for some reason. I just want Dolph Ziggler to be top, one of the top names in this company so badly, and I hate that he lost that match.
But he win. He won on Monday Night Raw, but he loses next week. So God knows what they're doing.
I mean, I don't know. I just
want card churn.
Yes, yeah. Thanks. They taped it. That's what you're saying.
Yeah,
it's I did not know that.
In the can. In the can.
Wow.
It's funny though because WWE came out with a video after he won on Monday Night, and you know. They put it out there that he was frustrated and he hopes he's turning things around with this win, but it was already known knowledge to most people that he lost the following week. So many of the comments were, oh yeah, sure, put out this video, but he already lost last week, so that doesn't make sense.
I don't know, man. I just want him to succeed.
I think that ship has sailed into the sunlight. Chris, how do you feel about either Ziggler or this whole Fandango-Ziggler match?
I think they're both in kind of a mid-card churn, and, you know, it was just one of those meaningless matches. I mean, I don't think they're doing anything with Ziggler, and I don't really think they're doing much with Fandango either, so.
Yeah, just kind of there for you to digest. Now, CM Punk defeated The Shield in a 3-on-1 handicap match. Now, first of all, this match, I thought it was done very well, CM Punk overcoming the odds. They had Reigns, who was blinded after he missed a spear on the outside, and, of course, that led to the pinfall. They kind of played up the fact that there was a little dissension in the Shield, but not that much, and, of course, the following night the Shield were fine, so God knows if they're splitting up the Shield or not. And I bring up the following night because CM Punk with partners couldn't defeat the Shield. So, I don't know. Chris,
I don't know.
Your thought about the match, first of all, at TLC, and then the following night on Raw, the follow-up.
I thought the match on TLC was very well done. I thought it was the best match of the night. And I like the way it turned out. I like the way that Reigns sold the eye thing. And I like the finish, honestly. I thought it was really good. We got CM Punk over, and I thought it got CM Punk over without making the Shield look too weak. So I think it was accomplished. The next day on Raw with them getting their win back, I think it's all good. It went about as good as I could hope, I think.
Okay, fair enough. Dan,
I agree with that. After sitting on it for, you know, a day or two, that I think those matches were all about the Shield. I think they're okay now, but I do think, unfortunately, it's leading to a split.
I don't think it's unfortunate. Split them up.
No. These guys will have fantastic singles careers, but I like them right now. I like the Shield as a faction. That's all I mean by unfortunate. I don't disagree with you either. I just like to
I'm
going to
see them in gear.
Huh?
That's what I'm looking forward to. I want to see them in wrestling gear. I'm tired of the stupid flak jackets.
Ooh. Mm. I like the look.
You want to see them in tight.
The look.
You want to see them in tight shorts, is what you're saying.
Yeah, Dan, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, okay.
Thank you, Larry Lawson.
Yeah. I didn't clean any pipes today, though. Anyway, I just think CM Punk was put in that program. I think it's just forwarding the story for S.H.I.E.L.D.
AJ Lee defeated Natalya. We all thought last week Natalya was going to be the winner. How do you guys feel?
Indifferent.
I just don't know why Natalya can't get over. I really don't.
When they were playing up the fact that it was their first pay-per-view match in 3 years, and still nothing.
Why did they just refuse to recognize the best wrestler on the roster? They've done it for years. I mean, it's not a surprise, but I just don't understand why they don't. Why? You know,
I can't say.
I mean, they did the same thing with Beth Phoenix, with Victoria, with, you know, just they never seen
that. Very good though.
No, she's good. Don't get me wrong, but Natalya is better as a technical wrestler, and it's just. But I mean, it's just an ongoing thing with WWE, and I know it's never going to change because it's always the models and those people are going to get over. So whatever.
Well, preferably the models can wrestle.
Preferably. More
Trish
often.
Trish Stratus.
more often than not, they can't.
Well, true.
Trish Stratus was around in a different era. They actually had wrestling women at that point. More than one or two, let's put it that way.
That's true. Big E Langston defeated Damian Sandow. That was a WWE Intercontinental title match. Do we have anything, really?
Again, I'm upset that they're not pushing. So who cares? It's a lost cause. Sandow loses. Just, you know,
well,
put on the main event in the opening match. I don't care anymore.
The biggest thing is that there's no mid-card. There's no urgency on the mid-card, and that's the biggest problem in the last 5 years for WWE. Do you have anything, Chris?
No. I mean, it pretty much went about as I expected. So.
Now, I think a high point of WWE in the past year is their tag division has kind of had a resurgence. We had Cody Rhodes and Goldust. They are the champions, and they defeated Ryback and Curtis Axel. I don't consider them really a tag team. They're not going to be together too long.
Something just thrown together.
The Big Show and Mysterio and the Real Americans. My biggest problem with that is the Real Americans really didn't get much of a showcase. I like the Real Americans. I want them to succeed. I want them to be champions before too long, but I don't see it happening. But overall, I think the tag division is a lot stronger than it has been in recent years. You have the Usos. You have, of course, Cody and Goldust, which will most likely lead to a WWE WrestleMania match. I hope.
Oh, feuding?
Oh, I hope so.
That'd be great.
I hope so.
I always said one of my favorite moments is when it's one of the – it was right after Cody debuted, and it was the Royal Rumble, and him and his brother were in the ring at the same time, and it was great. For 2 minutes, they worked against each other. It was great. I say, 08? Is that 08, or am I putting that too soon?
No, I'm not sure. Now.
Do you remember when Cody, what year did he?
I don't remember.
I can't remember. It was not long ago, but it was, don't laugh at me. I'm trying to be serious here.
Well, you're asking me information that I don't have offhand. But
you don't have to laugh at me. Go ahead.
Chris.
Am I the only one that has a problem with this match type?
What, the Fatal 4-Way, the elimination?
Yeah. I thought the match was good overall, but I was sitting there and wondering why people are tagging in. It just drives me insane.
What do you mean?
Well, you know, why would you tag in if you're in that type of match? Why would you want to tag in if you're opposing?
Well,
it's
an elimination, so you could.
Yeah, but why would you be in a hurry to jump in and potentially get eliminated?
You shouldn't be.
And that's what bothers me about that type of match.
One of the best things that I ever saw was actually, and Dan, this is your WCW reference, I take it from you. I believe it was the Steiners and Harlem Heat against the Outsiders. they tagged in, I believe Nash was in. They tagged in Scott Hall. Scott Hall comes in. Nash lays down.
Yep.
And two count. It was broken up by the Steiner brothers. But I think that's the most intelligent thing you can do.
Pretty much.
But there you go.
Yeah, I don't like the rule
that
set.
That was one fall to a finish, though. That was one fall to a finish. Let me make that difference. Which is kind of odd because they could tag in each other. But anyway, I'm sorry, I cut off your point.
Yeah, no, it's just the rules bother me. I don't get it. Why people would tag in, and I was preoccupied with that. Maybe it was just me, but. It was a good – overall, the match was good. I would have rather had the Real Americans be in that last match with the Rhodes brothers as opposed to Big Show and Mysterio, but it ended up being a decent match, so overall it was fine.
R-Truth defeated Brodus Clay. Did anybody care?
No.
Moving on. Nope. Kofi Kingston against The Miz. No disqualification match, and I think the crowd really summed that one up. And, again, this goes back to – the fact that they haven't built up the mid-card. They put it into a place where the people will just want to see the main events at this point. Nobody cared. And the fans lashed out at both individuals in this match. I don't think Kingston is a bad wrestler. And I certainly don't think The Miz is a bad wrestler. But why would anybody care to see these guys go?
No, nobody cares about the program. Nobody cares about the feud. Nobody cares about the match.
I didn't even know they had a feud.
Yeah, there wasn't really a feud. But, I mean, there was no reason to get invested. There was no real reason. I mean, those are the type of matches we see on Raw all the time. Why do I care?
Yeah.
Yeah, it didn't seem like that it belonged. It just, it seemed out of place. And like you said, obviously, with the reaction of everybody else, we're not alone in thinking it. It just was like, why is this happening now or at all?
Yeah, I agree. The Wyatts did defeat Daniel Bryan. Good story told. How do you see it, Omega?
I like the match. I thought when Bryan or when sorry when Wyatt Bray Wyatt did the backbridge spider thingy, that was kind of cool. It was creepy. I think Bray Wyatt was.
You like that?
I thought it was cool. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
No, I'm just asking.
I thought Bray Wyatt did really well. He continues to get over that character and plays it to a T. I'm okay with the Wyatts going over. I think it was a good match overall, though.
So. Dan, how do you see it?
I was actually pleasantly entertained by that match. I liked it. I enjoyed it. I'm not knocking the the spider walk. I just I made a comment as that was done already in 1973. I didn't get it though. I don't get why did he do that. Does anybody know?
I mean, does he have any reason? It's just the kind of nuts thing.
Well, I guess you're right. No, I didn't say it needed reason. I just was like, why? Is it?
Yeah, it's been done, but I think it added something. As long as it adds something, I'm fine with it.
I liked it. I started liking the Wyatts again. Sorry, Dean.
You can like who you want, Dan. And then Randy Orton, he is the new unified champion. It was a TLC match to unify the titles. Interesting finish to that. I enjoyed the finish. You saw the old handcuff to the turnbuckle routine that I personally have done myself. And but you saw a different thing to that where Cena takes off the turnbuckle and drags it with him, and then Orton used the rope pretty much in the tug of war, pushed him off, and I think the biggest thing was that nothing happened. It was a clean finish. I think that was the biggest story of that, and Orton is your first, well, your second unified champion.
No, not only that, I loved the match. It was a great match.
Well, let's not get ahead of ourselves, Dan.
I thought it was great.
I was very underwhelmed by it, honestly.
Ah.
Thank you, Chris.
Maybe I was expecting worse?
Maybe.
I don't know.
I just thought the match was just kind of there. I didn't even care for the finish. I thought it was like, really? This is where we're going? Super Cena has to drag the rope with him? I don't know.
I liked the finish, though. I liked the finish.
Oh, the finish was great, too. I did like that.
The match itself... I think Orton can do better with other people, as evidenced by the following night, where Orton and Daniel Bryan had a possible match of the year contender, if it wasn't so darn late in the year. Very good match. The finish, not much to speak about. What did you guys think of that match on Raw?
Chris, go ahead.
I didn't actually see it, so
okay,
I'll have to go ahead.
Back to me. I agree with you. It was one of those things where it was first time I watched Raw live in a long time, and I was sure glad I sat through it. It was really, really good. And I do agree. I think match of the year, I don't think, who cares if it's this late? I think somebody should include it in the list somewhere.
Well, it's just very difficult to quantify that so late in the year. It happens all the time.
Oh, yeah.
In end of the year list. So, how do you guys see TLC as a whole? I think after 3 or 4 months of very bad pay per views, at least this one had a few things to take away from.
No, compared to the last couple of shows, pay per view wise, I thought this was really good. You know, it wasn't amazing, it wasn't great. I was happy with the finish. I did expect something a little more after the match. But I was, you know, I was happy with it.
I was thumbs in the middle on it. I thought it was okay. I didn't feel cheated, but I'm, you know, not impressed. It was a couple good matches, and I'm okay. It was fine.
Well, that's better than Battleground, for example.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's, yeah.
I'm just saying that Battleground it had the name of a crap pay-per-view.
It had a great match on there, though. A bona fide match of the year contender with the Shield against Cody and Goldust.
Well, that's true, yeah.
It did have, that was a phenomenal match. So it did have that, but overall that pay-per-view, and it's really that last match that throws it out of there. The finish, of course, when Big Show comes down and people didn't care about the Big Show because nothing made sense with that. We'll talk about more of this next week with when we look back at wrestling in a little more detail for the year. But nobody cared about that feud with the Big Show and Triple H. And more to the point, they didn't. It was one of the Big Show's like going to leave and own the company, but he still wanted to. If he was going to leave and sue WWE and own the company, is his exact words as he was leaving that night on Raw, or Triple H just give him the match. Why wouldn't you leave, sue the company, and make your own damn match at that point? It's just the logical inconsistencies of such things. And I know I shouldn't because it's wrestling. I should just go, yeah, Triple H, you're backed into a corner, and just stupid stuff like that bugs me. It just bugs me. It just bugs me. Nobody cared about Big Show being thrust upon the main event picture. And obviously the reaction to that, I don't know what the plans are going into WrestleMania. Where do you guys see WrestleMania right now? What do you see are your top three matches for WrestleMania?
The clue.
Yeah, I don't even know what is going to happen for WrestleMania. I have no idea.
I'm going to put my money on Daniel Bryan and Shawn Michaels. Put my money on that.
Really? Michaels is coming out of retirement for another one?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yes, if that's the match, that's the one he'll come out of retirement for. I'm going with Undertaker and Brock.
Ew. That's
probably true, yeah.
And I'll go with four. I'm going to have CM Punk against Triple H, and this is going to be for power of the company.
Ooh.
You're going to have Vince side with CM Punk. You're going to have Stephanie with Triple H, obviously. And noteworthy is Vince did make his television return at TLC. He did come out and congratulate Randy Orton after his win. And apparently there was 10 more minutes of Randy Orton in the ring after the pay-per-view went off the air.
That's what I thought.
And as far as your heavyweight title, that's hard to say. That's kind of up in the air a little bit more. Is Randy Orton your champion until then? Most likely. Who will he face? Who wins the Royal Rumble for that chance? I don't know. Maybe Roman Reigns. We'll see.
I've heard that. It's somewhat intriguing, but I just can't see them pulling the trigger on that. For
too soon, you think?
Yeah, too soon.
Too soon for Roman?
I think they might have considered it, but I think they'll ultimately back off because it's too soon.
And then again, you have to say, what about Cena? What's his role in WrestleMania? He'll probably get rewarded with something. It's not going to be The Undertaker this year. I don't see that happening. It's hard to say. I mean, I said last week that I thought that Undertaker would take on, I think Brock is what I said, but I thought we were going to see possibly Punk and Bryan. That could always happen. But I really think they're kind of directing it toward a Bryan and Michaels. Shawn Michaels is doing something. There's a reason that he's back on TV. There's a reason he's still around. It just depends if he breaks that code. If The Undertaker gave him a blessing to come back for another match, I think is what that is all that's left. Your thoughts, Chris?
Well, I mean, if he comes back for that one match, yeah, I mean, at least it's with somebody good. I'm not terribly invested in it, though.
Really? Punk and, not Punk and Brian, but Michaels and Brian, you wouldn't be invested in?
No, I really don't have any emotional reaction to that.
But that's the guy who trained.
I know. I get it. I understand the concept of the match. I just don't care. I would rather see Dane O'Brien doing something relevant to the title picture than picking up Shawn Michaels, who's been retired for 2 years or 3 years or however long.
It's been a while, actually.
You know, whatever, however long it's been. It's just, I mean, don't get me wrong, HBK, it's the WrestleMania. I get it. But
yes,
it's not HBK of, you know, 10 years ago. It's HBK of 3-4 years retired.
I think he can certainly go. He get back in the ring and train a few months, and I think we'll see a pretty good HBK to come back for WrestleMania, hopefully. I'm hoping for it, even if you're a curmudgeon. How about you, Dan?
I'd love to see that.
Thank you, Dan.
I'm not just saying that. I would love to see that. And you planted the seed while we were chatting a couple days ago. I'm like, you know, I never thought of that. And I call me an idiot. I didn't know that Shawn Michaels was his trainer. So once you told me that,
I'll just sit over here and mind my own business then.
Yeah, you should shut up. I'm an idiot, and you be quiet.
There you go.
No, once you told me that, I was like, well, that adds something to it. I'd like to see that.
I think it would be a great match.
And plus, I just like seeing Shawn Michaels.
But I really think, you know, Punk, you might have that whole thing, Punk goes with, against Triple H. I think they're kind of going that route. Possibly Triple H will cost Punk the Royal Rumble. That's always a way to do it. Of course, we're coming up to the Royal Rumble where things get a little more interesting and where business proverbially picks up. So be that as it may.
Always my one of my favorites.
Now, I do want to talk about the Sellies for a moment. They're voting still open till next Tuesday at 8 p.m. And we have a few close calls here. I'm not going to give out the exact number of votes, but let's just say it's a lot of votes for both individuals, and only 6 votes at this point in time separate the two. And, of course, I'm talking about the Reverend Bob Levy, who was on July 27th, 2013. He's, of course, a stand-up comedian and radio personality. We were joined by him for a 90-minute interview. Chrissy Rivera, who came on July 10th, 2013 as part of Girls Night, she was here and pretty much first time publicly that I know of talked about her relationship with Sami Callihan. So these were 2 great interviews. 6 votes separate the two. You can make a difference. And people have voted again, but of course, as Chrissy went up, Bob went up. So 6 votes. They were down. It was down to 4 votes at one point. I'm keeping a close eye on this one. So just vote for one or the other. And I really...
Right now.
But I really do think nobody can hear us right now, Dan. Well, they'll be hearing us now on the podcast. I know what you meant. I know what you meant.
No problem. We're good.
But we're not live.
Right. I know. I knew that. I was saying, you listen to the podcast right now, stop what you're doing. I don't care if you're at work or whatever you're doing. Go on the website and vote now.
Now, this one is down to 4 votes. Of course, this is Independent Wrestler of the Year. There are 5 great individuals. We have Adam Cole, Matt Tremont, Johnny Gargano, Drew Gulak, and Michael Elgin. They are up for contention. 4 votes separate Adam Cole and Matt Tremont. So make your voice heard. And if Matt just got out there and said, hey, vote for me, I'm sure Matt would be the winner. But he actually didn't even vote for himself. That's the type of guy that Matt is. He voted for Adam. But
such a terrible 2013.
Be that as it may, a lot of the other ones are pretty much wrapped up. Like Mainstream Wrestler of the Year, that's going to be Daniel Bryan. I don't see that changing. Independent Promotion of the Year, that's going to be CZW. I don't see that changing. But
Dean,
still,
you're giving away the show.
But there still are a lot of great...
Yeah, Dean, what are you doing?
But there are... Well, people can look. I mean, they, if you have over 50% of the vote this late, you're most likely it's not going to change things.
I'm going to go to the site and skew it.
You have to have the drum roll and the, you know...
You can only vote one
thing. Circumstance.
Damn it.
Yes, I made sure that you can only vote once.
I know. I can hide my IP. I'll skew it.
Go ahead, Dan, just to ruin it. At this late.
Oh, I'm lazy. Like, I'd ever do that.
True. Laziness
Come on, man.
Is a factor. Laziness is a factor. Now, Omega, I did want to make note of this as well. UFC on Fox had a great night of action. Demetrius Johnson very well should be considered the champion of the year. Unfortunately, he didn't make the cut in our in the sellies because this fight was a little too late, quite frankly. But
what about the other three or other two?
What do you mean?
He had two other fights in 2013.
I know he was 2-0, but I put Weidman on there. Stop. Anyway, Demetrius Johnson was victorious. He actually won by KO. So what do you think? I mean, a very dominant year for Demetrius Johnson. And like I said, somebody that people kind of overlook.
Yeah, Demetrius Johnson is certainly deserving of consideration in the pound-for-pound rankings. I mean, he's already there, but he's really getting up there now and really showing his dominance, showing his variety of skills, just showing he's better than everybody else in his division. It's unfortunate that his division doesn't get much as much attention as it deserves, because he came out and knocked Joseph Benavidez out in a minute and looked extremely good doing it. You know, he needs to be in this conversation. He needs to be in the top five of the pound for pound, maybe top three at this point. He's really good, and he's once again proved it. He's had a fantastic year. I don't know what else I can say about it. It just looked great.
Certainly, and like I said, he certainly does deserve to be in that discussion for top fighter of the year. Uriah Faber continuing his dominance over contenders but not champions as he won by submission with a guillotine choke. That seems to be his go-to thing these days. So how do you see Faber second round, 322 win?
As I said, he continues to win as long as he's not fighting a champion. He doesn't lose. He looks great. You know, we can argue whether or not he's old or whatever. He's old. He's older than most guys now. He's 34. I'm 30. You know, I look at him as an older guy. He's been around lots of fights. Certainly a longtime veteran of the sport. But he's looking better than he probably ever has right now. Really running through guys. I don't know how much longer you can put off a title shot with him. I mean, he think he deserves it as whoever. Wins when they unify the title between Barao and Cruz. I think Faber deserves another shot. You know, I know he's had a lot of them, but I mean, it's hard to argue with a guy who beats the number three guy decisively and to not give him a shot after five fights. I mean, makes sense to me.
All right, and Chad Mendes, Nick Lentz, how did you see that one?
Mendes just didn't look good. I think he said he had a sinus infection. He was thoroughly dominated that fight, though. Even with not being himself, it didn't look like himself, didn't have his power, gassed out pretty early, but he's still very dominant. He's still definitely in that conversation for another shot at Jose Aldo.
Lozon Danzig was a fight of the night contender. Didn't win fight of the night. That's a big surprise to me.
It wasn't really that great of a fight, honestly. I mean, it was a good fight, but Lozon was pretty much winning that fight the whole way. You know, Danzig was game. He was fighting back, but he just wasn't getting anywhere. I don't know how much longer Danzig is for the UFC, but we'll see. I mean, but Lozon, he tried, but he didn't really come out and have that dominant performance, that crazy performance we expect out of him to get fight of the night. So He was overshadowed by the prelims in this case.
And, of course, the fight of the night was Barbosa and Castillo. How'd you see that?
It should have been a draw. That first round should have been 10-8. On most on my card, it would have been 10-8. Castillo really dominated Barbosa in that round. Barbosa was fighting back, but he just got beat for that last couple of minutes. Got thoroughly dominated and then came back and started to find his rhythm, started throwing those leg kicks, started to throw more spinning kicks and stuff like that. And just, I guess Castillo just gassed out. And Barbosa clearly won those last two rounds. By all rights, in my view, it should have been a draw. But in any case, Barbosa takes the victory, and I'm fine with that. He got lucky in this case, but really should be more 10-8 rounds in MMA. But this is probably one of the premier examples of that.
All right. And anything else you wanted to talk about?
Cody McKenzie is crazy. I don't know what his deal is. If you didn't see the prelims, he comes out with shorts bought from Walmart. The tags are literally on his shorts as he's in the ring on top of who was he fighting? Sam Stout.
Mm-hmm.
Herb Dean has to go over in the middle of a fight and rip the tags off his shorts because he forgot his shorts at his hotel, forgot his banner at the hotel, apparently got drunk after the fight.
Oh, my.
Just I don't know what's wrong with that guy. I don't expect he'll be employed much longer after that kind of deal. He lost this fight, too. So, yeah, just an embarrassment for
you.
So
how much were they?
Oh, I don't know. Somebody was saying online somewhere that they weren't even like shorts like you would wear like to play like sports. They were like boxer shorts. They're just plain white boxer shorts, and they were thin enough you could kind of see through them. And they had pockets, which are blatantly illegal.
Oh.
So the UFC just totally screwed the pooch. I don't know how he was allowed to fight with pockets.
That would have really been the commission's call, though. They would have had to, because usually they'll check the gear and everything at the pre-fight meeting.
Yeah.
And that's done by the commission. I actually sat in on one of those meetings when I was at Locked in the Cage, and they check all the gear. They make sure that everything is up to speed. So that's not really a UFC thing. That was the commission that screwed the pooch on that.
Well, Dana said they have guys to police that.
Mm.
They have a UFC guy to police that. So maybe the commission probably has the guy too. But, I mean, how he got out of the cage with pockets is beyond me. I don't know. I don't know how it got past and got on national TV. that Herb Dean had to walk over and literally rip the tags off a guy while he's trying to ground and pound his opponent. It's crazy.
That's a black eye, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
You wouldn't expect to see that in UFC. Maybe World Series of Fighting. Maybe in World Series of Fighting. No offense to World Series of Fighting, because that's a fine promotion. Next week, of course, it's our look back at wrestling for the year. We'll look back at the independents, the wrestlers of the year, the matches of the year, some of the events of the year. And, of course, WWE. It's been kind of a down year for WWE. Started off pretty strong and then kind of faltered somewhere between SummerSlam and here. So we'll talk about all that. We'll talk next week, Chris. Very important, I think. UFC 168 will be taking place. And, of course, that's the rematch of Weidman and Silva. Your champion, Weidman. That sounds strange. It still sounds strange, Chris. And then, of course, the rematch between Rousey and Tate. Didn't end so well last time for Tate, as she suffered a broken or at least dislocated arm.
Ouch.
From that fight. I did post that up on my Facebook earlier, so if you didn't see the rubber arm of Misha Tate after that fight,
yeah.
Go ahead and take a look at that.
Take a look at that. That's
It was a rubberized arm. There wasn't much left to that elbow joint after that. You know what, though? 2 weeks later, she put out on Instagram a picture, and she was fine. So it was probably just popped, and she was back. It was it actually a break? I'm not sure if it was.
I don't believe it was a break because she was – I think she tweeted, like, a couple days after that it was just – there was just tendons and things yanked on and stretched, but they weren't. It looked nasty. I mean, she must be double jointed or something or whatever. I don't know. Somehow.
That was March 2nd, 2012. Finally, the rematch coming on December 28th of this year to round out what possibly could be the biggest event. At least if you listen to UFC, Chris, it's the biggest event in UFC history.
Sure, why not?
And we're going to charge you $5 extra dollars for that.
Yes, it's worth $5 extra dollars for it. Yeah.
Yes. So we're going to charge you $5 extra dollars. Of course, we also have Barnett. Who's Barnett fighting? It's actually
Travis Brown.
Yes, Travis.
That's a big, that has implications for the heavyweight division.
And then two other fights that are kind of there. I'm not looking forward to the other two fights on the main card, but it will get me in the proper mood. Hopefully they're good fights, and I don't even know what they are because I'm not looking at it right now. But that's next week. We're going to talk about UFC 168 in great detail, talk about what Anderson Silva has to do to win to recapture his title. That's the way I look at it. That's his title until Weidman can prove that he can defeat a motivated Anderson Silva. What's Tate got it to win? Obviously, she has to stay away from that armbar, but everybody tries. She even tried to stay away from it. She did escape the armbar. I think she's the only one who has escaped the armbar attempt. She did escape one on that March 2nd fight. So we're going to see. So that's next week, the Sellies. And I believe that's going to be on Thursday. I'm not sure yet. Just stay tuned to the Twitters and Facebooks. I'm not sure if we're actually going to do it on Christmas or on the day after. So stay tuned for that. It depends on if I'm still enjoying the holiday festivities. If I want to rush home,
Thursday would be better.
And talk to you guys or not. Again, I'll make up the decision later on, Dan. Not right now in the air. But that being said, next year we're also going to have Dan Severn, the return of Dan Severn, and a night of ultraviolent comedy. That's on the 8th and 15th, respectively, and I am working on a few other things as well. So stay tuned to all the social media links, and I'll go over them in just a second. But Omega, where can the fine people find you?
Follow me on Twitter, at Omega Squad.
Dan, how about yourself?
DanLaw83 and Obey Puck Show.
That's right. And I am, of course, the Dean of Credibility, Double D. You can find me at Folsom County. You can also follow the official Twitter at HIC Talk Radio. Like us on Facebook, and that is, of course, facebook.com/HIC Talk Radio. Follow us on Blog Talk Radio. Why not? It's blogtalkradio/hellinacell. This is probably where you're listening to it, so just click that follow up there. Let us know that you support the show that way. You can also find us on iTunes, and the links are out there on social media. We're also on Stitcher Radio, and more of you are listening to the program on Stitcher Radio as of late, and I thank you for that. Stitcher Radio gives us some more stats, and we can see exactly what shows you're listening to, what shows you're tuning out of. And that gives us things to think about. So I do appreciate that. So continue on with Stitcher Radio. And we have moved up the ranks on Stitcher Radio as well. So that's somewhat exciting.
That's a step.
Yeah, somewhat exciting. Not only that, just make sure you stay tuned. It's either going to be Wednesday or Thursday. Most people listen to this as a podcast anyway, so we could do it on Friday night and nobody would care. Of course, coming up this Friday, we are going to be after midnight. That's Emil, Jay, and myself. We're going to be talking about Cage of Death from Emil's perspective. We're also going to talk about the Duck Dynasty. Or not. I'm not sure. I haven't figured it out yet.
Controversy.
It's so stupid. But
it is really stupid.
But that being said, have a happy holiday, whatever holiday that may be. But we'll see you after the holidays and after Christmas. Right here.
Rocking around the Christmas tree at the Christmas party hop. Mistletoe hung where you can see every couple tries to stop. Rocking around the Christmas tree, let's
Happy New Year!